better look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 6 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Radio Free St. Louis,
AM 920 WGNU.
And we're back. Bob from Scranton, you're on the air.
Hi, Ted. Love the show. Long-time listener. First-time caller.
Thanks, Bob. Is there a special someone out there you'd like to talk about?
There is, Ted. I recently lost a very big part of my life.
You'd been together a long time?
Since college. This is for my belly, my paunch, my spare tire. I know we had some good times. God knows I'll never forget that night in Albuquerque with the burritos.
It's never easy to lose something that's been such a huge part of you, Bob. Where'd the magic go?
Well, I'd recently begun taking the stairs more and more instead of the elevator, and then we started seeing less and less of each other. One day, it was just gone.
Small step number 67. Take the stairs instead of the elevator or escalator. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Let's sing that new song.
My music track, track, track from my bottom jack. Jack, Jack plays MP3s, threes, threes, and I download fast, fast, fast. I read the bits, bits, bits on the microchips, chips, chips, and I burn, burn, burn all my favorite hits, hits, hits.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in technology, but parents can help keep them updated. Go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
Nobody's perfect, but mistakes can slow down your tax refund. So watch out for these common errors. First, get your Social Security number right or your refund goes nowhere. Second, be sure you qualify for the Earned Income Tax Credit before you try to claim it. And third, double-check your math. What's the easy way to avoid errors? More people e-file their taxes to the IRS than in any other way. It's easy, quick, and accurate, so you'll get a check from the IRS, not a letter.
When I do it, everything goes dark. My heart pounds, my hands shake, and I feel like a completely different person. The rush is so intense, I think everybody should do it.
Kenzie Olson is under the influence of her community theater volunteer, helping out at an after-school theater program. She helps Kenzie stay off the street and off drugs. So, share a skill, a passion, a hobby with kids in your community, and you can make a big difference. That's because kids who enjoy a regular positive activity with an adult are less likely to begin using drugs or alcohol. Find out how you can be a coach, a mentor, a volunteer. No matter what it is, you have something to offer. Log on to helpyourcommunity.org or call 877-KIDS-313 and be an influence on the kids in your community. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
I'm Frank Scafidi, Director of Public Affairs at the National Insurance Crime Bureau. Becoming a victim of an earthquake may be impossible to avoid, but you can avoid being victimized by dishonest contractors and adjusters. After an earthquake, salespeople go from door to door in damaged neighborhoods offering cleanup or repair services. While many of these business people are honest and reputable, others are not. Educate yourself against unscrupulous operators. Get everything in writing. Demand references and check them out. A catastrophe greatly magnifies the opportunity for fraud. Don't be tempted to conspire in an insurance claim. Insurance fraud is a felony. For more tips about avoiding disaster fraud, visit the NICB website at www.nicb.org. To report disaster fraud, call 1-800-TEL-NICB. That's 1-800-TEL-NICB.
Which one's yours?
The one at bat.
Oh, that's okay, Chris. Only my kid could strike out and see ball.
Oh, run, Chris, go!
Looks like he's having some trouble running.
Oh, he's wandering way off the baseline.
It's like he can't see.
Oh, my gosh, his helmet is too big.
It's as big as a bucket.
You know, I must have gotten him an adult one. What was I thinking?
You're out!
When safety equipment doesn't fit, it's game over. That goes for your kid, too. If they're too big for a car seat, that doesn't mean they're the right size for an adult safety belt. If they're under 4'9", they need a booster seat. It raises them up so the safety belt fits properly. And the right fit makes all the difference to their future. To learn more, visit www.boosterseat.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
Would it be crazy if you just stopped everything, packed your bags and left for a week, a month, a year? What if you left for 2 years? Would people think you'd lost your mind? What if you were going far away to help in a village on the edge of the Gobi Desert? A village crowded with Buddhist temples, not skyscrapers. A place where there isn't a word for recluse, but 1,000 words for community. Would it be crazy to go 5,000 miles from home? To spend time with people the rest of the world only reads about? To build libraries and fill them with stories? Prepare a meal with food you helped grow? To teach children and learn a thing or two about yourself? Would that be crazy? Peace Corps. Life is calling. How far will you go? To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or visit peacecorps.gov.
Coming up Thursday morning on the Wake Up Call, we get another visit from our friend Tyson Slocum, director of the Energy Program for Public Citizen. Last week, he testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee and talked about how recent mergers among oil producers have made it a lot easier for them to gouge the consumer. And higher prices attest to that. Here's what's really interesting, though. The committee also asked representatives from the leading oil companies to come and give testimony. But none of them showed up. Wonder why? We'll have Tyson Slocum's thoughts on that, too, and what to expect this year on that issue. Thursday morning at 9, here on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Mary Knoll is people like Greg Darr, a lay missioner who worked in Kenya.
Mary Knoll gave me the tools to ask things of the world. If the response is that somebody is inspired enough to go out and help somebody, that's great. That's mission. And that's Mary Knoll. I'm just thankful I've been a part of that.
Mary Knoll is a 100-year-old Catholic organization of priests, sisters, brothers, laymen and women, helping the poor in 39 countries around the world. Mary Knoll and you can change the world. Find out how. Check out Mary Knoll's website, www.maryknoll.org, or call and order a subscription to Mary Knoll magazine in English or Spanish, 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. One world, one mission, Mary Knoll.
Time now for another edition of the Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. Views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or advertisers of WGNU Radio. This broadcast is a production of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio, and is intended solely for the information and entertainment of our listening audience. Any rebroadcast, transcribing, recording, or other use of this material without the expressed written consent of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio is strictly prohibited. We ask that you govern your calls within the bounds of brevity and good taste. And now, the Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Tonight. I will never say that progress is being made. If you take a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below made.
I'm hearing revolution in the air, brother.
city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever. More families in trouble. More and more people who need help but can't find it. They struggle against the common enemies of man. Tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equality.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white,
revolution in the air, feel the brothers, how to understand. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air, feel the brothers, how to understand.
It is time for us to use our power. Please do not beg for power. Nobody is going to give it to you.
Some very sad news for all of you and people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Feel the brothers, stop the sisters.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever. More families in trouble. More and more people who need help but can't find it. They struggle against the common enemies of man. Tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal.
The following is a best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU. We have What Is Live, we have the Ion News, and Irene B. Smith. Take a look at 10 o'clock if you can see the best of
Asian, Latino,
AM 920 WGNU.
And we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
This is Mondays at 9 with Liz Brown, where we take a closer look at issues and people shaping our world and how they affect us. Once again, here's Liz Brown.
Welcome. Welcome to Mondays at 9. Our guest this morning is author Thomas Shapiro, author of The Cost of Being Black in America, How Wealth Matters, and What Can Be Done About It. And Thomas Shapiro is joining us from Boston, Massachusetts this morning. Thomas, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing this morning, Liz?
I'm outstanding. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's a pleasure to be on again.
It's wonderful to have you here. I would like to focus on the part of your book, The Cost of Being Black in America and What Can Be Done, How Wealth Matters and What Can Be Done About It. I'd like to first start, before we get to the What Can Be Done About It part, I'd like to kind of give people an overview of the book and your principle about the cost of being black in America.
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. In The Hidden Cost of Being African American, I really set out to answer a very important question. And to me, the question is, in a so-called post-civil rights era, where we've made a lot of headway in terms of laws and customs, how can we best explain the persistence of very harmful racial discrimination and racial inequality that seems to go across generations, and it's not stopped with the changing of laws? And the measurement I use in economic terms is to look at families of financial assets.
Mm-hmm.
And what that shows very quickly is that the average African-American family has about a dime in wealth for every dollar of wealth that the average white family has. And there's a huge racial wealth gap in the United States that does not close very much at all as the other important gaps around income and jobs and education close. So that as African Americans are making some very clear progress when the yardsticks and criteria are merit, like education, jobs, and your paycheck, that doesn't show up very well in terms of a family's financial assets, their wealth. And it's that kind of wealth. We're not talking about millions of dollars here by any stretch of the imagination.
And I think that that's a really important point, that because when we talk about, when we use the word wealth, I think people's minds sometimes can go to that place of hundreds of thousands of dollars. We're not talking about that.
Well, no, we're not talking about that at all. What we're talking about is essentially, does a family have enough financial reserves, enough wealth to be able to think about putting a down payment down on an average price house,
mm-hmm.
or to afford a year of a community college, or to start a small business? And the answer to most of those questions for most people are no.
So when we take that into consideration, and before I say that, I do want to get to some of the attitudinal thing, barriers that are out there, too, that prevents people from seeing these differences in between black folks and white folks. When you wrote your book, The Hidden Cost of Being African American, you talked about the way that white people looked at how they obtained their assets, and that
yes.
was very mm-hmm. revealing.
It was revealing to me. It's probably one of my biggest surprises in doing the nearly 200 interviews that we did to the research to help put this book together. And what you're referring to was that a number of young white families, these are families with young school-age children, you know, 5-, 6-, 7-year-old kids, and they were struggling with trying to find a house in a community that they wanted to live in and to get their kids in the kind of schools that they wanted to. A number of them were very lucky in that they had parents or grandparents who were able to forward them the down payment money to buy a house, the kind of community that they otherwise couldn't afford just by their income alone. And this is a way that, in my thinking, the historical legacy of race passes itself along from generation to generation. Now, when those young white families had to account for, when they were asked in the interview, how did you acquire these assets? How are we able to live in the community that you are to afford this kind of house, to send your kids to that high-quality school system? Almost invariably, their answer is, we earned it or we deserved it.
Mm.
Very little acknowledgement that they were very lucky and had a good portion of those financial assets that allowed them to move up in life passed along, that it's not something they earned. They turned that around in a way by talking about, I understand and I hear their voices very loud and very clear here. One couple, for example, in the St. Louis area, talked about how they both held two jobs, how they were holding garage sales on weekends, but they still couldn't get enough money together for a down payment on a home where they wanted to live. And finally, the mother, the grandmother in the family, stepped forward and said something like, this is ridiculous, and wrote a check out for $30,000. Now, they're very lucky, but my point is that there are literally millions of people working just as hard as that family and just as deserving, but do not have parents or grandparents that have the ability to, you know, take the checkbook out and write the kind of check that will afford a home in a community where the people want to live.
And you keep saying the phrase, a home in a community where the people want to live. That's distinct from being able to buy a house at all, right?
Both of those are involved. Both of those are important.
Because I mean they are worrying about and trying to get to a place, a different place than a person of African descent in many respects. They're trying to simply buy a home as opposed to even being able to buy a home in the neighborhood where they would really want to live.
That's correct. There are a lot more restrictions still operating on where African Americans are feel comfortable in buying homes.
Now,
I know this from my interviews in St. Louis. There's some, the lines are pretty hard.
Oh yes, very much so. And Thomas Kent, have you thought about where does this worldview come from? Where does this view come from that we earn this, or that it was some kind of entitlement?
Well, I've been trying to think about it because it's a very important question. I think part of it comes out of a twisting of the American dream. That part of the American dream that essentially says America is the first new nation in the world with supposedly, I know this is going to sound ironic, supposedly without a caste system,
mm-hmm.
Where people can end up where their own achievements and merits take them, that there weren't those barriers in the so-called old European countries that held people back. And that ethos, that psyche, is so profound in the United States, and it's a very progressive notion in a lot of ways, such that people want to attribute whatever station in their life that they have gotten to their own attributes, to their own achievements, to their own merits, and find a lot of psychological difficulty and sometimes political difficulty in a public acknowledgement that they got there not out of their own doing, but because somebody helped them by writing a check or whatever the form of help was. I think that's very profound. As a sociologist, I know that that attitude also has other important functions in the society. But one of the things it says is that if you haven't gotten to the station in life where I have, something must be wrong with you.
You're listening to the best of the Wake Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU. We will return with more of the best of the Wake Up Call following the traffic and weather update and these commercials.
Even when the darkness shall come.
Doctor?
Hi. And who is this little girl?
This is Vanessa.
Hi, Vanessa. What seems to be the problem today?
She's always sick. Always.
That's because she's a kid, and kids always get sick.
She keeps getting infections. It worries me.
You're a mommy. That's your job.
Exactly. That's why I worry.
If your child is repeatedly sick, it may be PI. Primary immunodeficiency, a defect of the immune system, affecting as many as a million Americans. The only way to rule it out is by testing. Early diagnosis and treatment can prevent recurring infections from causing permanent damage.
I don't know. I think there is something wrong with her.
Take it easy.
Don't take it easy. Talk to us about PI. If you don't know what's wrong, you can't make it right. The Jeffrey Modell Foundation. Visit us at info4pi.org or call 1-866-INFO-4-PI.
Good morning, St. Louis. 34 minutes after the hour of 6 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Helzberg Diamonds. North Warson at Liberty, there's a structure fire, and Warson Road is shut down south of Page. Use Ashby as an alternate. Northbound 55 between Imperial Main and Green Park, look for no problems to report. Eastbound 44 from Antire to 270 looks good. Eastbound 40 between K and Boone's Crossing, everything's on the move. Eastbound 70 from K to Springs to 270, nothing to report. Northbound 270 from Gravoy to Marshall, everything is still on the move at this hour. Westbound 255 from Illinois Route 3 all the way in to Lee May Ferry looks good. Coming in from the east side, westbound 270 from the Canal Bridge to the Riverview, pretty much the same, no problems there. Westbound 5570 from 4th Street onto the PSB, expect normal traffic. Westbound 64 from 15th onto the PSB looks good. Westbound Kingbridge traffic at 5570 all the way in to Cleeds Landing, nothing to report there. Northbound Route 3 from 157 to the Poplar Street Bridge, no problems to report there as well.
Westbound 255 at Jefferson Barracks is a report of bridge construction. Right lane is closed at this hour, and that is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Helzberg Diamonds. Only 5 days until Valentine's Day. Be her hero with one of over 500 gifts under $100 from Helzberg Diamonds. Shop online or find the nearest store at Helzberg.com. Helzberg Diamonds, women's moments, the smarkle. Sorry. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Saturday. Mostly sunny this morning and early afternoon, becoming partly sunny later on today with a high around 40 this evening. Not quite as cold, mostly cloudy. Scattered flurries after midnight with a low in the upper 20s. Then moving on to Friday, mostly cloudy. Scattered flurries in the afternoon, a high in the upper 30s. Friday evening, mostly cloudy. Scattered flurries with a low in the lower 20s. And on Saturday, mostly cloudy skies, scattered flurries with a high in the mid-30s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 22 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 19. The wind chill makes it feel like it is 11 outside. Clear skies will make that happen. That is a look at this hour's traffic, this hour's traffic and weather. We'll take another look at your news traffic and weather at the top of the hour. Till then, more of the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
I know the place to shop for all your appliance needs. Sears, 3425 Union, black-owned and black-operated, Jerome Williams. Sears carries the top six appliance brands, Kenmore, Whirlpool, Maytag, GE, Amana, and Frigidaire. Sears also has the latest in electronics, TVs, VCRs, camcorders, and DVD players. Now, if you find a lower price on an identical branded item with the same features currently available at another local retail store, Sears will match that price plus give you 10% off the difference. That's the Sears Price Match Plus policy. So, save yourself a trip. Stop at Sears first and get a low price promise plus a great selection for your home and garden needs. It's all at your local Sears store right there at 3425 Union, Jerome Williams, 389-9700.
This message is only for business owners and managers. How would you like to be able to increase your sales anytime you want it? Need to do a new advertising campaign, but first you need some extra business to pay for it? You want to make improvements to your store, but first you need some extra business to pay for it? You want to take that needed vacation, but first you need some extra business to pay for it? What you need is ITEX, I-T-E-X, the International Trade Exchange. With ITEX, you'll get new customers who will go out of their way to do business with you. The ITEX network works like a nationwide sales force to increase your sales and reduce cash expenses to improve your bottom line profits. So join the other smart business owners right here in St. Louis who have already found out how to increase their business and improve not only their bottom line, but also their quality of life. Contact Herb Steck at your local ITEX office to see how much new business you can get and how much cash you can save. Call 636-441-8930. Remember that number, 636-441-8930. With ITEX, you and your business can trade for a better life.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me weekday afternoons from 2 to 4 on AM 920 WGNU. This is the station that discusses the issues that matter most to you. And if you have a problem with personal work or family relationships, it really matters to me. So call me at 1-800-DR-LAURA. That's 1-800-DR-LAURA. Tune in to Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU, weekday afternoons from 2 to 4. Then go do the right thing.
Coming up Thursday morning on the Wake Up Call, we get another visit from our friend Tyson Slocum, director of the Energy Program for Public Citizen. Last week, he testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee and talked about how recent mergers among oil producers have made it a lot easier for them to gouge the consumer. And higher prices attest to that. Here's what's really interesting, though. The committee also asked representatives from the leading oil companies to come and give testimony. But none of them showed up. Wonder why? We'll have Tyson Slocum's thoughts on that, too, and what to expect this year on that issue. Thursday morning at 9, here on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. This is the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. Don't leave home without it.
The following is a best of the Wake Up Call. We have more News, traffic, and weather at the top of the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Moore.
This is Mondays at 9 with Liz Brown, where we take a closer look at issues and people shaping our world. Once again, here's Liz Brown.
Welcome back to Mondays at 9. This is Liz Brown. I am talking to author Thomas Shapiro, author of The Hidden Cost of Being African American. We're talking about the issue of reparations this morning. Thomas, welcome back.
Thank you.
Let me get to a caller or two here. Ex-Peter, good morning.
Good morning, Liz, and your guest. You know, I heard him mention the issue of reparation, which, by the way, I'm also supportive of for many reasons. But it looked like the idea and the sentiment of not only the populace here in the United States, the Caucasian populace, but also even the justice system. And I give reference to just a recent court decision in the Supreme Court where they refused to hear the plea of the descendants and the victims of the Tulsa race riot in 1921. Now, all the time we have always heard the excuse that, well, no one today is living that experienced slavery. But these people did experience this, and they're the remembrance of this. But even when you try to get justice in the court, like we have seen, the same type of justice that has been handed down to other ethnic groups which have experienced similar atrocities, people of African descent are completely ignored. So how are we ever going to overcome this type of sentiment that seems to exist here in the United States?
Thanks, ex-Peter. Thomas.
Peter, that's a great, I think there are a couple of great questions in there. I think the discussion this morning in many ways really is trying to focus on the reception in the United States of a conversation about reparations and how can we think about making that reception more favorable so that we can have a serious conversation about it. And I think that strategically, in terms of planning, that a very important consideration is to talk about the historical aspect first, to talk about the historical memory in the United States for a number of reasons. It's really important to remind people of the absolutely essential, valuable contribution of people of African descent and people of other descents as well. But it's the contribution of people of African descent that has been delegitimized, in my humble opinion, over the course of decades now. And that's part of what a serious discussion about reparations does. Another thing it does, I think, is, and it's something I've struggled with, and Liz, I'd love to hear your viewpoint on this. I used to be concerned that a discussion about reparations only dealt with history, and that only dealt with slavery, as Peter referred to. And I'm concerned about that because my own work shows that the thread of the history of race in the United States, which to my way of thinking is very much part of the historical amnesia, race and race in the United States is ground zero at America's shortcomings in our experiment with democracy, and that's why it's so important. But we tend to make in our minds a break between the past and the present. My research shows, and I'm absolutely convinced of this, that in cities like St. Louis, Boston, Los Angeles, places I've done my research and in every other city, that if you buy a home, for example, in a community that's largely white versus compared to buying a home in a community that's 40% non-white, for example, that your wealth in terms of the home equity, how fast your home appreciates in value, and that creates wealth, that that wealth creation is a lot greater in the white community than it is in the non-white community, and much greater than it is in a community that's largely African American. So the processes we're talking about, the dynamics of race and the way they're embedded in, they're deeply institutionally embedded in the society, is not just something from slavery. It's part of the legacy, I believe, that has come to us from slavery and the way we've dealt with race in the United States. So, in my way of thinking, a discussion about reparations includes the past, all the way back to slavery, through Jim Crow, and continues up to an acknowledgement of the harm of present institutional arrangements.
Well, I don't know how we can... In that, I hear kind of like a breaking of the chain, because I guess enslavement is the original sin, and all actions after that are all fruits of that poisonous tree. So if we're going to have a discussion, if we're going to have this truth and reconciliation component to this, doesn't it have to go back to the original sin? And what is the reason why you have a community where wherever there are a number of people of African descent, that value goes down? Well, that comes from the understanding and the values that were established that allowed people to say that they were justified to drag people of African descent from their countries and put them as free laborers in this country, because there is a lesser value of these people. That comes from the original enslavement ideology. How is there a break in that chain?
Well, I'm not sure we're saying things that are a whole lot different here, because I think it is important. I think that the whole chain, as our metaphor has been developed here, mm-hmm. our whole chain of the history of people of African descent in the United States needs to be a part of this discussion of mm-hmm. reparations.
So let me get to another caller here. Marty, good morning.
Yes, good morning, Liz. I'm enjoying your show as always.
Thank you, and you're here with Thomas Shapiro.
Yes.
Good morning, Marty.
How you doing? I'd like to make a couple of comments. One, the longer they let this thing about reparations drag out, it seems like the longer people's memories, like you were saying, memories tend to lapse and they want to forget. And two, if they did bring up reparations, wouldn't it also be bringing up things that have been done to the Native Americans and stuff? Wouldn't they be worrying about the Native Americans coming up and asking for reparations? And three, I think that when you start looking at reparations and bringing people's wealth up to let's say a person or a race that has or been ruling the country, how do you think that people would actually bring somebody else up to their speed and make them equals when it benefits them more to keep them at a certain level, and not make them equals and keeping them down with certain things, like having a house that, let's say, on the north side, and no matter what you do to it, the cost of that house does not go up. And then if you come to the south side, the house, if you fix it up, and you might not do no more to it than what you would do on the north side, the house is all of a sudden worth $250,000.
Thank you for your questions, Bob.
Well,
Thomas.
Sure. You've got great listeners and people with great questions. And as a professor, I'd love to have them in my class. Let me take up two parts of Marty's discussion. One is his idea about forgetting. The longer we go without having reparations discussion, the easier it becomes for that historical memory to fade, or for people to write their own narrative that isn't true to the history. And I think, unfortunately, we're seeing a lot of that today. that's why exactly why I think it's so important to have a conversation about what is our historical memory of race in the United mm-hmm. States. What was slavery about? What were some of the causes? Who were the people that benefited? Who were the people that perpetrated it?
And how people benefited.
And how people benefited.
Because isn't there, like, one of the thoughts out there is that, well, you know, my great-great-grandparents didn't own a slave. First of all, you know, there is no www.slaveowner.com. You know, most people really don't know.
There's no registry.
Absolutely, absolutely. But that aside, people benefited from enslavement without ever owning a slave.
Absolutely, absolutely. The wealth of the society, the gigantic, rapid economic development of the society was based on slave labor.
That's right.
I think historians agree, there's very little doubt about that. I would like to talk for a minute about Marty's comment about who is included and who would be excluded in a reparations discussion.
Well, can we take a break, please?
Sure.
And then when we come back, I would love to get to that. I'm talking to Thomas Shapiro. He is the author of The Hidden Cost of Being African American. He's also the Provost Chair of Law and Social Policy at the School of Social Policy and Management at Brandeis University. My name is Liz Brown. This is Mondays at 9. We will take a break, but we will be back right after that. Stay with us.
You're listening to the best of the Wake Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
This is your Wake Up Call Global News Update. Dateline Washington. A man described by many as one of the most dangerous in Washington is also referred to as Defense Secretary Rumsfeld's chief henchman. Dr. Stephen Cambone is the Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence Matters. He gave testimony at the Abu Ghraib Senate hearings and did not seem concerned about the abuse of prisoners or how it was seen around the world. Cambone, the most powerful intelligence operator in the Bush administration, has never served a day in the military himself. He has control over a number of defense agencies and also dictates the activities of the CIA and National Security Council. During the Reagan years, he worked at the Los Alamos nuclear facility, drawing up policy for space-based weapons. When George Bush Sr. took office in 1990, he was chosen to head up the Star Wars program at the Pentagon. He disappeared from the radar screen during the Clinton administration, but came back to work for Donald Rumsfeld after the September 11th attacks to lead the war planning and intelligence efforts. In 2002, he was promoted to make sure Rumsfeld's plan to trim and reorganize the military got accomplished. He was given another job in April of 2003 to take over covert counterterrorism teams who did sabotage and assassination jobs out of the Pentagon. Rumsfeld decided to take that duty away from the military because he thought they weren't aggressive enough. He also led the way through the CIA renditions and secret interrogations. He's said to be so hated inside the Pentagon that most of the brass there said he would be the one person they'd most likely to see drop dead. This is your Wake Up Call Global News Update.
It's been a strange winter. Warm one week and cold the next. All that stress is hard on your roof. Better call Phil Person Roofing at 361-7127 and get it checked ahead of the spring rains. You can get a 15-year warranty on the new modified rubber roof made by GAF, the largest roofing manufacturer in America. Finance that new roof, commercial or residential, with your Visa or MasterCard. Always free estimates. Philip Person Roofing, 361-7127.
You want your preschooler to be ready for school. Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center is ready to help you prepare your preschooler not only for school, but also for life. Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center is an outreach of Trinity Tabernacle, Assembly of God in Bridgeton. Your child, age 2 to 4, receives a non-denominational Bible curriculum with Bible stories, songs, arts and crafts, plus lessons in numbers, science, arts, and phonics, to help prepare him or her for kindergarten. Your child will also grow personally, socially, educationally, and spiritually every day as a unique individual created by God. Call Christine at 314-291-8839 to learn more about Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center and to register your child. Open Monday through Friday from 6:30 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center, 11950 Mark Twain Drive in Bridgeton, 314-291-8839. Serving the community since 1979.
Big Brother is watching, and we're watching Big Brother on the award-winning Makeup Call with Liz Brown.
You're listening to the best of the Wake Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU. Stick around for the news and the weather and traffic, as well as Eye on the Lou with Irene J. Smith and Liz Brown. Right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Liz Brown.
Welcome back to Mondays at 9. This morning we are talking to Dr. Thomas Shapiro. He is the author of The Hidden Cost of Being African American. We're talking about the issue of reparations. And, Thomas, we were talking about the question that was raised by Marty.
Right. Let me make three quick points here, if I can. One, I want to talk just for a minute about who's included and who's excluded in this discussion. In Brazil, for example, if we want to think a little comparatively and internationally about discussions of reparations, the discussion in Brazil about reparations includes indigenous peoples as well as the slaves that were left in what is now Brazil. We may want to think about how to include Native Americans in this discussion as well. It would be it would change the conversation slightly. Because the redressing of that particular historical harm may have to be thought of a little differently, but I would suggest that we would want to make that inclusion.
But Marty also raised the concern about the resistance to the idea of reparations would be fueled by the fact that. Well, if this country gives reparations to people of African descent, then this will open the doors to having to give reparations to other people, indigenous people included, and that's a legitimate concern.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. That's partially why the strategy. I think one strategy that's evolving here is one that we could call progressive realization. Mm-hmm. Where we have the truth and reconciliation part first, mm-hmm. That's divorced from how do we address it. That's divorced from money, if you will. And I think that tends to be that discussion would draw in a lot of people. What comes out of that discussion is okay. If the society or enough people in the society arrives at a point where we clearly understand that our historical memory is one where these grievous practices in the past have a present application in terms of structuring racial inequality, then the question is, what do we do about it? Now, I've become much more taken by the relatively recent bent in the reparations discussion around this that is moved from talking about individual reparations to building community assets. And I would say something like this. I think in a country as wealthy as the United States that we might want to think about rectifying the continuing inferior investment in things like schools, housing, medical care, and community service that continues to plague the African-American population, and we could add if we wanted.
You've been listening to the best of the Wake Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU. To hear more, go to whiterosesociety.org and click on Thomas Shapiro. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call is up next with Irene J. Smith. It's Eye on the Lou. That's in the 7 o'clock hour. This is AM 920 WGNU.
Sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight. I will never say that progress is being made.
you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below, that the below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how can you listen?
That not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Aldinger. Some good news in our ongoing battle against cancer and some not-so-good news. Here's ABC's Jim Hickey.
Public service announcements like this one may be having an impact.
This year, more than 172,000 people will be told they have lung cancer.
The number of people dying every year from cancer in the U.S. has dropped. Not by much, about 370 fewer cancer-related deaths in 2003 than in the year before, according to the National Center for Health Statistics. But it is the first time in 70 years annual cancer deaths have fallen. Experts say the reasons are fewer people are smoking and tumors are being detected and treated earlier. Jim Hickey, ABC News.
Here's hoping it's going to be business as usual today at the Russell Senate office building. The place was cleared out last night after a sensor detected what might have been a nerve agent in the building. Cindy Pearson works for the Senate Armed Services Committee. She went into the garage with a lot of people to wait it out.
There were a lot of senators in there, and they're walking around talking to people, and people were doing work and reading reports, and a couple of people were playing cards.
And it turned out it was a false alarm.
Well, thanks, Gary.
First Lady Laura Bush met with the Pope today. She is now the highest-ranking American to come face-to-face with the new leader of the Roman Catholic Church, Benedict XVI. Later on today, First Lady will meet with the Italian Premier.
I don't know what to say. This is really a big, big night for our band.
It was a good night for you two, not so much for another favorite going into the Grammys.
Mariah Carey did win 3 Grammys, but you would never know it from watching the telecast. None of her awards were in major categories, and they were all announced before the show. Besides losing Album and Song of the Year to U2 and Record of the Year to Green Day, she was beat out by former American Idol Kelly Clarkson for Best Female Pop Vocal Performance.
That's ABC's Dave Alpert at the Grammys, and this is ABC News.
Ready, everybody? Sammy, put down the rich chocolate Ovaltine hot. Okay, here comes the beep. Hi, you've reached the Connors. Beth?
Jerry?
And Samantha?
We can't get to the phone right now because
I want to finish my Ovaltine hot. It's the best hot chocolate in the whole wide world.
Sammy?
It has vitamins and stuff, but I just like the taste. Yummy, creamy, chocolatey, and
Sammy?
Ovaltine hot makes my belly feel all warm inside and
Sammy?
Oh, leave a message.
That went well.
More Ovaltine, please!
Harry, what are you doing in our living room shirtless?
Don't call me Harry. My name is Thor, Prince of the Night.
Thor?
Yes, my temptress. I have traveled far to find you this treasure.
What treasure?
A treasure as unique as you, my damsel.
A diamond right-hand ring for Valentine's Day?
Yes. Surrender to me.
Oh, Thor.
Anyone can be a romantic hero this Valentine's Day. Give her a diamond right-hand ring that shows you know who she really is. Go to adiamondisforever.com/valentine and find the perfect style for her.
This just in, the Middlesex District Attorney's Office in Massachusetts says that police in England have arrested Neil Entwistle, whose wife and baby daughter were found murdered in Hopkinton, Massachusetts last month. The Olympic torch arrives in Torino, Italy later on today. Opening ceremonies for the 2006 Winter Games are set for tomorrow night. ABC's Aaron Kuchersky is already there.
Several times on its two-month-long journey here from Rome, protesters against a high-speed rail project have forced the torchbearers off course.
Someone lost an occasion to celebrate with us.
Local Olympic Committee President Valentino Castellani says the torch relay is no time for a demonstration.
I'm confident that everything will be under control.
Thousands of police officers stand ready to make sure the Olympic torch has a clear path to Friday's opening ceremonies. Aaron Katursky, ABC News, Torino.
Mrs. Bush leading the U.S. delegation to the Games in Torino. I'm Daria Aldinger, ABC News.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Hunter Brandmeier with your WGNU News Update for the 7 o'clock hour. In the news this Thursday, one man is dead after another man was stabbed outside of Webster Groves' home.
Police say they found a man stabbed in the 100 block of West Thornton around 4:30 yesterday afternoon. The stabbing victim is hospitalized and expected to recover. As police spoke to a second man at the scene, that man collapsed and later died. Police are not sure what caused the man's death or whether he was responsible for stabbing the surviving victim. It's back to business as usual this morning in the offices of Missouri Senators Kit Bond and Jim Talent after a scare last evening. The offices of Bond and Talent are both in the Russell Senate office building, which was evacuated last night because of a false alarm indicating the presence of a possible nerve agent. Lawmakers and staffers were allowed to return after about 3 hours when tests determined that there was no nerve agent in the building. Several senators were in the building when the alarm sounded, but Bond and Talent were not reported to be among them. Illinois Senator Dick Durbin is speaking out against Defense Department proposals that he says would impact the Illinois National Guard. Durbin met with Illinois Guard leaders yesterday to discuss the planned National Guard cutbacks. Durbin says the cuts would cost Illinois more than 10% of its National Guard strength, which would reduce its ability to respond to security threats and natural disasters. Finally this hour, Mid-America Transplant Services is celebrating a record-breaking year of organ donations in 2005. Last year, MTS had 142 vital organ donors, its highest number since its formation in 1974. MTS Chief Operating Officer Diane Brockmeyer explains why she thinks there was such an increase in donations this past year.
We contribute the incredible year that we had in 2005 to continuing collaboration with our hospital partners, continuing to listen to what the community has said about ways we can enhance our services, and particularly listening to what donor families have said to us have made a real difference at the time that they are given the opportunity to make a donation decision.
MTS ended 2005 with a 27% increase in organ donations, representing nearly 100 additional lives saved in 2005 than in 2004. The organization also reported a very good year for minority donations, with minority families increasing their donations from 31% in 2004 to 54% in 2005. This WGNU News Report is brought to you by your Greater St. Louis Area Toyota Dealers. Toyota owners, tires are an important part of your vehicle. Through February, purchase 4 tires from your St. Louis Metro Toyota dealer and receive 3 complimentary oil changes. Toyota, moving you forward. That's your look at local news for the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Hillsburg Diamonds. North Warson at Liberty Avenue, there's a structure fire. Warson is shut down just south of Page. Use Aspie as an alternate. Northbound 55 from Imperial Main all the way to Green Park. Everything is on the move. Eastbound 44 from 141 to 270. No problems to report. Eastbound 40 between K and Boone's Crossing. Everything looks good. Eastbound 70 from Cave Springs on to 270. No problems there. Northbound 270 at Gravelway and 44. It's starting to stack up at this hour. Westbound 270 at Canal Bridge and Riverview. No problems to report. Eastbound 70 from Bryan Road all the way to 79. Look for heavy volume there. Eastbound 40 at 170. Look for traffic congestion to have been cleared, but there may be some slight delays getting on to 40 at this hour. Westbound 5570 at 64 in the Poplar Street Bridge, expect delays. Westbound 64 to 5570 split all the way into the Poplar Street Bridge. Look for slow traffic there. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from the Illinois Bank onto Laclede's Landing. Slight delays at this hour. Northbound Route 3 from 8th Street onto the Poplar Street Bridge. It is slow. Those ramps are, and eastbound Gravelway at 141 and 270, everything looks good. Southbound Grand at Lafayette, look for an accident reported. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Hillsburg Diamonds. Only 5 days until Valentine's Day. Be her hero with one of over 500 gifts under $100 from Hillsburg Diamonds. Shop online or find the nearest store at Hillsburg.com. Hillsburg Diamonds, moments that sparkle. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Saturday, becoming mostly sunny in the morning and early afternoon, and partly cloudy by the afternoon, again with a high around 40 this evening. Mostly cloudy, not quite as cold. Scattered flurries after midnight with a low in the upper 20s. Then moving on to Friday, mostly cloudy. Scattered flurries in the afternoon, high in the upper 30s. Friday evening, mostly cloudy, scattered flurries, and a low in the lower 20s. And on Saturday, mostly cloudy, scattered flurries, and a high in the mid-30s. Currently, the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 23 degrees. Lambert Field's reporting 20, but the windshield makes it feel like it's 11 outside. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. That's up next. Eye on the Lou with Irene J. Smith, and Liz Brown is up next. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, tell me, sister. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother.
Hand-picked school board members, up-and-coming elections, recalls, battles in Jefferson City, knock-down drag-outs at the Board of Aldermen. Who is who and what is what? That's what you get every Thursday at 7 a.m. when Irene J. Smith joins Liz Brown on the wake-up call for an up-close personal examination of the comings and goings in the St. Louis region.
Welcome, 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 welcome to Eye on the Lou. This is Liz Brown, and good morning, Irene J. Smith.
Hey, good morning, Liz, and the listening audience.
How are you?
I'm okay.
Very good, very good. My goodness gracious, we have a number of things that we are going to talk about this morning, and I want to say that... we're going to move the education piece to a week from now, and we're going to, because there are some major local issues that are percolating very hard here in the city, and we wanted to hop right on top of those.
Oh my.
So let's get to it. Where you want to start, Ms.
You know what, Miss Liz? You know, the Animal Lawn Parade is so close to so many of us who have grown up in North St. Louis and been going to the parade. And the moving of the parade route is really, really causing a little ruckus.
Well, and I think rightly so. Mm-hmm. I think rightly so. When you look at the things. I mean, because there are some wonderful, you don't want to miss Word on the Street today, because the some of the Word on the Streets that we're going to give at the end of the show really tie into the energy of what's happening in this city in terms of the effort to to gut an entire power structure, to gut an entire community, and to marginalize that community and turn the city into, you know what's going on right here? We didn't even need Katrina to eliminate, to take the, to have the efforts engaged in to eliminate an entire portion of the city based upon the race of the city.
Exactly. I mean, and you know, people say, oh, you're used to our beat and redistricting, but that certainly played into it as you go through our community. But the parade, I mean, this has been something that started in our community, and yes, the route has changed, but the route has always still remained in primarily the African American community. And to listen to the chairman of the board, and I've read the things that he has said, you know,
the chairman of the board
at Animal Lawn Home,
okay,
and
right.
I think that's Aaron Phillips, has written letters to the editor, mm-hmm. and he's talked about how we want to be more inclusive. We want more people to come.
Now, let's just break that down, since we're both two attorneys here. Okay, we're talking about a parade that is about a black institution. We're talking about a parade that is in a black community. We're talking about a parade where white folks are there generally in the floats part of the parade. When you hear a black person or any person say, we want to make a black parade inclusive, what does that mean?
To me, that means that the 100,000 black folks that come, you all are not enough. We want to include others from other parts of the city, Caucasians and other people.
And make a comparison, if you will, Irene, of how absurd it is to take a parade that's identified with the community and move it to downtown. I mean, that would be like moving what from what?
I mean, take the Dogtown Parade. I mean, you know, it's in Dogtown. Take the Dogtown Parade. No, don't move it downtown. We want to be more inclusive, so we want to have more African Americans attend the Dogtown Parade. So let's move it to North St. Louis on Natural Bridge.
And it's called what?
Dogtown.
And where is Dogtown located?
In South St. Louis.
And it's called the Annie Malone what?
Parade.
And where is Annie Malone located?
In North St. Louis.
It's it is absolutely, absolutely, absolutely insane from the perspective of the logic of it. I think, you know, what's Foxhead would spin around off his body about the absence of logic here. But it's also part of a plan.
Mm-hmm.
It's also part, because you have talked about this before, Irene. You have talked about the folly that is the development of downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And talk to us more about that, because the way downtown is being quote unquote redeveloped is folly.
A lot of it is, but a lot of emphasis is going to be filling up downtown, because as we will talk about on Word on the Street later on, we're going to see some changes in downtown St. Louis. But it's amazing to me that they say, of course, the Animal Lawn Parade. To quote the chair, he said, we're more than a parade. And of course we know that. We know how important the Animal Lawn Home is to our community and to children who have nowhere else to go.
We're more than a parade. What does that mean? What does that mean from his? What did he mean when he said that?
When he said that, he meant that we provide services, we provide daycare.
Oh, he's talking about the institution, not the parade.
Right.
Okay. Let's remember that thought when we do our Word on the Street. Let's remember that thought, okay?
And you talked about, yes, and Animal Lawn has suffered a lot of cuts from the state, and so then we as community and appeals should be going out to the community to fill that gap. But to me, it's saying, you know, let's get away from this black stuff,
That's right.
And let's move on down here. You know, it's my understanding from talking to someone, and they didn't give me the privilege of saying their name, so I will not. But they're affiliated with Harris Stowe. And it's my understanding that Dr. Givens was not even aware of the fact, prior to it being publicized, that Harris Stowe would be the staging site of the parade.
Ain't that... Now, stay here in that moment of disrespect. Let's understand and underscore that moment and that feeling of disrespect. What people outside of the community of African descent are saying is that we don't have to talk to any of y'all. We can take your stuff and we can move it any doggone where we want to move it. And all y'all supposed to do is to shut up and get in line. This is the president of a university. And he was not contacted. Somebody sat down and planned this out, and there was not any respect given to him. So that shows you who your friends are, and that shows you what your friends think of you, that they would just take something, plop it at your house and say, you handle it, and I ain't going to bother to ask you because I know what you're going to say because I'm telling you, and you're going to say yes.
Hey, but look, if we could just take a minute, and I want to read this quote from the letter justifying the move of the parade. He says, the change in the parade route is not about politics or public appearance by local politicians. It's about a variety of groups, organizations, clubs, marching bands, businesses, and individuals coming out to celebrate families. Of course, we want to welcome support and involvement. We would like to have everyone's support. We would also like everyone to embrace change and to come out and enjoyed the parade like they'd done before.
Kiss my grits. I mean, that you know what that is? If anybody, just put your sniffometers on right now. Put your sniffometers on right now and go back to when Roberti hit town. Go back to all of the changes where all of the schools were closed in Northside, and all the people didn't even know that their schools were being closed.
No.
Nobody talked to any of them. That's exactly, this is the same energy. This is the same method. These are the same, put your sniffometers on. You can smell it. It's the same thing. It's the same attitude, it's the same ideology, and it's the same practice.
I like what Bernice Jones King said. You know, who is irate because she should be. It goes through her ward, and that benefits a lot of the businesses along the route on that day. And Bernice said, hold up. Who do they want the parade to become more accessible to? 100,000 people attend the event. We can't get that parade to embrace more than that. But this is what she said that really I really like. She said, she does not see the city. The city does not have any problem getting the word out about Mardi Gras and the St. Patrick's Day parade in other city neighborhoods. But there always seems to be a problem when the city was asked to assist with the Anna Malone Home Day parade. So what do we have here? We get this big discussion about diversity. And there's nothing about it. And you all heard me say, you know, if folks want to get tied up and feel good, that's their business, you know. But the problem in the city is not, you know, going to eat at a white person's house or going to their church. We do a lot of that. The problem is us having a equal opportunity and equal share in the economic base of this city.
And there's also an additional point to that, too, Irene. There is an communities are built upon history. Communities are built upon ownership. Communities are based upon respect for the different types of people that are in a community. When you take the Annie Malone parade and you move it out of a community, you're taking away that community's history. You're taking away people. I'm not from St. Louis, but everybody I know has a story about something that happened for them or with their family when they were at the Annie Malone parade. It's a homecoming parade. So you take the parade and you move it away from home and you say it's going to be exactly the same thing. This is about contributing to the disconnect of a community. Take away all of their milestones. Take away all of their measuring sticks. Take away their pulse, and you take away, you either eliminate a community or you so disenfranchise a community that they don't care about anything.
Well, you know, according to Aaron Phillips, change in the parade route is about growth.
It's 100,000 people that go to the parade. How much? There's no. How many people go to the Mardi Gras parade? Are there 100,000 people at the Mardi Gras parade?
No. No. It says we are proud of this parade and we want to show off this event in a new centralized location.
So you shamed of it where it was before. You were ashamed that none of your friends would come to this parade now. So and let's just be real, Irene. White folks didn't come to, and black folks don't run to the Dogtown Parade. I mean, let's just be real. That's fine. These are neighborhood things. And these are neighborhood, I've got nothing to celebrate in Dogtown. I don't live in Dogtown. This is a neighborhood celebratory parade. Let's be real. White folks are not coming to downtown St. Louis to celebrate a woman they don't know nothing about, an organization they don't care nothing about, and people that they don't live near.
Well, it's my understanding there's certainly going to be an effort to make that happen.
Well, they're going
to
give away money?
I don't know. But he says, we want this to be a community-wide celebration. Community is relative.
Wait a minute. It's not, and this is the weakness in some folks' heads. It wasn't a community thing when it was with black folks. It's only a community thing when it's black, when white folks are part of it. That's what he's saying. He's saying it ain't good enough, it ain't full enough, it ain't real enough, it ain't significant enough, unless there must be a concerted effort to bust this parade to Melville. Because that's what we're talking about. And what happened to the babies that are bused to Melville?
They are not part of that community.
That's
no
fact.
Matter where you move,
that's
it, it's
fact.
Not part of the
that's
community.
Fact.
I like this. I like this quote, and it just happens to be from Jamila Nasheed. Moving it to downtown St. Louis is an insult to the families that use it as a touchstone, and to black-owned neighborhood-based businesses, many of which have supported the parade for years.
Let's talk about the business component of this, because the reality is that how do you destroy a community? You take away its economic base. How do you destroy a community? You take away its heart. How do you destroy a community? You take away its identity. The business component of this is real.
It is very real.
People made, the community made a lot of money when 100,000 people show up for a parade in your community. One of the things that doesn't happen often enough within the community of African descent, and since this is Black History Month, this is the thing that Carter G. Woodson talked about. This is the thing that has been beating on the drum forever, that a community is healthy when a dollar exchanges five times within that community. And the Annie Malone Parade Day, money was being exchanged within the community.
Exactly.
And that's an economic redevelopment going on the day of Annie Malone Parade.
And what's going to be interesting is how do you determine the permits? Okay, mm-hmm. who gets vending permits? Okay, pretty much so. You know, the businesses along the route made money.
That's right.
People who would maybe go get a temporary permit.
That's right.
You know, would
sell some hot dogs,
sell some barbecue, sell some food.
That's right.
I mean, how is that going to be handled? You know, now you're moving a parade to a cold area.
That's right.
There's no sense of
That's
community
right.
there.
That's right.
You know, and I mean, I don't get it. I don't get it.
Yes, you do.
I get it.
Yes,
I get
do.
It.
Yes,
I just
do.
Hate to say it. Yes. I mean, you know, it's not any better if it's somebody else's ice water. It's not good enough unless it's in downtown St. Louis or unless it's centralized. You know,
who is this dude that's running Annie Malone now? Where he come from?
Richard King. I'm not really sure about his background, but this was a board decision.
I understand, but who's on the board of Annie Malone? Has the board of Annie Malone changed?
I'm sure there may be a makeup of the board. I know that Aaron Phillips is the chairman of the board. Richard King is the CEO. I believe there are several other individuals on there whose names I don't have.
It's despicable. It is really a despicable, callous, self-loathing act.
Mm-hmm.
It really is a self-loathing act by Annie Malone to say, because that's what they're saying to the community is that you're not good enough.
Right. And I think people should voice their opposition
Absolutely.
To this move. And I'll give you the telephone number. The telephone number to Richard King is 531-0120. And let them know.
Say it again.
531 0120. Let them know how you feel.
And one of the things also is you need to listen to the word on the street about this, that are the repercussions, the ripple of the repercussions of this parade being moved outside the community. And one more thing I want to ask, because we've got to go to a break in just a second here, Irene. When you move the parade to downtown, is there some possibility that the older people in charge of this parade are now being changed because of the move?
Exactly.
And what and to who, from who to who, and then what are the ramifications of the aldermatic changes of now who's going to be in charge of, not only are you moving it out of the community, but you're putting it in the hands of people outside of the community. So what are the ramifications?
The ramifications is each year that the parade, you know, comes up, we get notification. The alderman whose wards the parade pass through, they're actually supposed to sign off on allowing the parade to take place. Mm-hmm. So now we have what would that be, the 7th, 19th ward?
7th ward is who?
Phyllis Young. Mm-hmm. That might be the 6th ward.
Uh-huh. 6th ward. Okay. That would be Phyllis Young. Okay.
6th ward would be Lewis Reed.
Okay.
You know, who happens to be an African American who represents the South Side ward. Mm-hmm. Michael McMillan. You know, it's gonna place it in different hands.
And so
I don't know how far they're going down. I think they're just going to start at Jefferson and then go on down. So, yes, you will be going through the 7th Ward.
And we got to take a break, folks. And the significance of that is huge. All of a sudden now, the parade is in the hands of people who live outside the community of African descent. It's insane. We got to take a break, folks. 454-0400 is our phone number, 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about.
Guess we'll be leading the parade.
Some kids have and some kids don't. And some of us are wondering why. And mom won't watch the news at night. There's too much stuff that's making her cry.
Good morning, St. Louis. 31 minutes after the hour, 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Mr. Clean Premium Windshield Wash. Westbound 270 between the Illinois 159 and 157, an accident involving a tractor trailer. The highway has been reopened. Crews are still on the scene. Traffic is backing up through 159 through the accident site. Northbound Warson at Liberty, there's a structure fire. Warson is shut down. South of Page, use Ashby as an alternate there. Northbound 55 from Imperial Main to Green Park, look for no problems to report. Eastbound 44 from 141 to 270 is on the move. Eastbound 70 from 270 to St. Charles Rock Road, expect delays. Northbound 270 from Gravoy through 44, it's slow as well. Eastbound 70 from Bryan to 79, look for heavy volume. Eastbound 40 at 170, look for that congestion to have been cleared. Eastbound 40 from Spady to Lindbergh, it is slow. Westbound 5570 at 64 and the PSB, look for delays there. Westbound 64 to 5570 split all the way into the PSB, look for slow traffic as well. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from the Illinois Bank onto McLeod's Landing, look for sluggish traffic going on there. Northbound Route 3 from 8th Street onto the approaches of the Poplar Street Bridge, you can expect slow traffic. Southbound Grand at Lafayette, there's an accident reported. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Mr. Clean Premium Windshield Wash. Before next winter storm hits, try Mr. Clean Premium Windshield Wash. Advanced formula helps your windshields stay clean all year long and protects up to minus 30 degrees when you need it most. Try Mr. Clean Windshield Wash today. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Saturday. For today, mostly sunny in the morning and early afternoon, becoming partly cloudy by the late afternoon with a high around 40. This evening, not quite as cold, mostly cloudy. Scattered flurries after midnight with a low in the upper 20s. Friday, mostly cloudy. Scattered flurries in the afternoon, high around in the upper 30s. Friday evening, mostly cloudy. Flurries are possible with a low in the lower 20s. Then on Saturday, mostly cloudy, scattered flurries with a high in the mid-30s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 21 degrees. Lambert Fields at 19 with a wind chill of 11. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call. It's Eye on the Lou with Irene J. Smith and Liz Brown. That's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the top of the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
We want to welcome a brand new sponsor to Eye on the Lou. Oh, I am talking about Hood Goods. Oh, my goodness. You can get everything there. All kinds of clothing, such as Dickies for men and women, Vibes, men and women, Apple Bottoms. How about some Echo Red, Girl Bought, fitted hats, shoes, Timberland t-shirts, underwear, men and women's coats, thermals, t-shirts, tall tees, regular tees, five for $20. You can't, it doesn't get any better than that. You need to go to 12100. That's 12100 Bell Fountain. Here are the hours of operation, folks, to get your, what do we call that? Shop on Thursdays, Mondays through Thursdays, 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Fridays, 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Saturdays, 10 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. And they're open on Sundays, too, 12 p.m. to 6 p.m. They got it all. A brand new sponsor of Eye on the Lou, Hood's Goods. You got to check them out. That's 12100 Bell Fountain. Check them out.
This is Mitch Washington of the St. Louis office of Edward Jones, located at 200 North Broadway downtown, inviting you to tune in to Radio Free St. Louis for the WGNU Stock Market Recap, weekday afternoons immediately following the 3:30 traffic update. Find out how your investments are doing and how the numbers on Wall Street are affecting you. That's the WGNU Stock Market Recap with me, Mitch Washington, weekday afternoons at 3:30 on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU.
You don't have to travel all the way to the mall to visit your Sears. Why don't you visit the only black-owned and operated Sears located at 3425 Union. That's 3425 Union. Sears, where else? That's right, where else, where else, where else are you going to get? Where are you going to get your DVDs? Where are you going to get your refrigerators, washers, dryers, stove? Where are you going to get the best tools in town? Where are you going to get them? You're going to get them at Sears, 3425 Union. That's right, the only full-service Sears in the city of St. Louis. You don't have to go to the mall. You don't have to take out a bank loan to fill up your tank. You have your stuff right here in your community. I'm telling you, the best service in town. Jerome Williams, get your shop on at Sears 3425 Union and tell them I told you to.
Coming up Thursday morning on the Wake Up Call, we get another visit from our friend Tyson Slocum, director of the Energy Program for Public Citizen. Last week, he testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee and talked about how recent mergers among oil producers have made it a lot easier for them to gouge the consumer, and higher prices attest to that. Here's what's really interesting, though. The committee also asked representatives from the leading oil companies to come and give testimony, but none of them showed up. Wonder why? We'll have Tyson Slocum's thoughts on that, too, and what to expect this year on that issue. Thursday morning at 9, here on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
What you need to know, when you need to know it. The award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Eye on the Lou. This is Liz Brown. I'm here with Irene J. Smith. Irene, this Annie Malone piece is just, it is so real. I mean, when you think about it, how, if we have a parade of 100,000 people, that 100,000 people show up to, that means that a lot of people from the neighborhood show up. So now people are going to have to get in cars, get in buses, to go someplace that's not in their neighborhood to go to this parade. When the new chairman of Annie Malone said that this is more than a parade, it is. It mm-hmm. is community.
It's an institution.
It's an institution, and an institution is only as strong as its membership. And to tell an institution to tell its membership that the institution is no longer here, go find me, that ain't going to happen.
And pay for parking.
Pay for parking, pay for transportation down there.
And the benefit will then go to downtown St.
Louis. There you go.
The economic benefit will then go to downtown St. Louis.
Let me get to a few callers here. Jeff.
Liz and Irene, I have somewhat of a different perspective that I'd like to share. I've lived within two blocks east or west of Natural Bridge for practically 50 years. And as a resident of the area, I can tell you that it's somewhat disruptive to the neighborhood during and after the parades. And I see this from a personal basis as a welcome move. The residents never were that happy with the parade coming to Natural Bridge. Some of your arguments, which I think are legitimate, were the same arguments that were made when it was taken out of the Ville. And so, you know, I think 100,000 people down Natural Bridge, it's outgrown the area, and it completely snarls traffic for about five blocks either way, and it's very disruptive to the neighborhood process.
Jeff, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
Appreciate those thoughts.
Sure.
They say the same thing about the Macy's Parade.
Mm-hmm.
They say that
mm-hmm.
same thing about every single parade in America. It is disruptive.
It is disruptive. And Jeff, believe me, having been an alderwoman who represented the ward that the parade went by, it is an inconvenience.
Yes, it is.
And I think some of it has to do with planning and the involvement of much more involvement of the street department and the police in terms of coordinating things. But whenever you have any type of parade, it is tremendously disrupted, but it's just for a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the city, just as they coordinate and clean up.
The Super Bowl is disrupted.
Right.
You know, I mean, all events that change the normal rhythm of any street, it mm-hmm. is disruptive, but you have to weigh that off of what is the value of this one day or two day, maybe. Disruption.
And the difference between moving it from the Ville to Natural Bridge, it is still in North St. Louis.
There you go.
Natural Bridge is a major intersection. And I look at the economic benefit that this brings to the community as well. And I certainly understand, Jeff, I gotta figure out, okay, now which street can I go over to get to my house and then come back around the other way to come to the parade on the years that I go to the parade. So I certainly understand your concern, but it's something that is whenever there's any type of event.
Let's get to another caller or two here. Orlando.
Yes, good morning. I had a couple of comments concerning the parade. The first one I was just thinking is, you know, as far as being disruptive, you know, I was watching New Year's in New York, and if individuals are able in New York to, after a parade, that's not bring thousands, not, you know, 100,000, but you're talking about hundreds of thousands of people, maybe a million people throughout the whole day or down in New York, and they were able to, I was watching WGN 9 News, and they were able to get that place cleaned up, you know, within less than a day. And you're talking about all the balloons and the ticker tape and all that kind of thing, you know, so I understand what he's saying, but it's one day like you were saying, and, you know, look at Soulard, you know, how many days that goes on and what kinds of things that go over
Mardi
that neighborhood,
Gras.
So.
Mm-hmm. And
the other comment I had, I'm sorry, is
ahead.
That, you know, how easy is it going to be, you know, we have a lot of people who use the, you know, parade, they, you know, make a little bit of extra money in the neighborhood, you have street vendors selling wares, selling food, are they going to be as easily to get licenses and
of
be able to set up downtown?
Of
like
course
this?
Not.
You know, so, you know, we have to really think of this, you know, like, you know, Sister Irene was saying that, you know, it's going to be an economic issue here. That's all it's about, you know, and it's going to take away from the black community. And it's just as simple as that. We need to stop trying to capitulate and trying to give reason for why we are giving our money over to a community that doesn't like us, hasn't been for us, and will not be for us.
Thanks for your call. Let me get to another caller. Joe.
Okay. I'd like to join in on your conversation, Buck. about the parade route. And my thing is, you mentioned about the board, and I'd just like to know who's stacking that board against us when you're dealing with the domain stuff.
Okay.
They got a board on that, you know, when you get ready to take your property, you get ready to get some land from the cities, or the LRA
that's a good
got a
question.
Board.
That's a good question, the board membership.
The board membership. And again, Liz, it's something that we have to get. Maybe during the next break we might be able to get the names of all of the board members who are on the Animal Loan Home board.
And that phone number again is 531-0120, 531-0120. I encourage all of you to call. I encourage you all to get your family members to call. There needs to be a call made to express your outrage, express your anger, express your concern, express your position about moving this parade. It is a slap in the face to the community of African descent. They're saying is that it's not good enough for it to be for white. There's almost like it's this understood piece, Irene, that white people are not coming to North St. Louis. We have to accommodate. We have to go hunt them. This is busing the parade to Melville.
It's busing the parade to Melville and the people who have a close tie to the parade. I mean, this is about a African-American institution.
There you go.
Okay, and that's the way it is. Now, you might want to say, oh, we're about, yes, you're about community, and that's why folks put their floats in the parade, every business in the city.
Every politician,
every corporation puts their business on a car, on a truck, in the parade. But it is part of the history of our community, and if we allow this to happen, it's just going to complete more, you know, spur on more dismantling of things that are African American.
And we're going to take a break here, and we'll get back to some of your calls. But before we get to the break, I just want to welcome a brand new sponsor for Eye on the Lou, Hood's Goods. I'm telling you, they have the best out Hood's Goods. Isn't that cool? Hood's Goods. Yeah, good, good. Wonderful, wonderful business. You can get everything there. Talk about supporting economically your businesses that support you. This is a sponsor, a brand new sponsor of Eye on the Lou. They're located at 12100 Bell Fountain. Their hours of operation Monday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Friday and Saturday, 10 a.m. to 8:30. Sunday, they're open on Sundays, 12 to 6. They carry all kinds of lines of clothing. You want to get your baby something good to wear. You want to get you something good to wear. They have the fitted hats. They have Timberland t-shirts. They have men and women's coats. They have thermal shirts, tall tees, regular tees, 5 for $20. You need to get to Hood's Goods and get to them at 12100 Bell Fountain. We're going to take a break, folks. We'll be back.
The Wake Up Call Global News Update is brought to you this hour by
Alliance Financial Group. How do the rich get rich? Let Alliance Financial Group show you how. Call 381-8967.
This is your Wake Up Call Global News Update. Dateline Cape Town. The two major airports in Malawi are shut down because of a strike by aviation workers who are seeking to get paid for overtime. The job action started on Monday and has forced airlines operating in and out of the country, including Air Malawi, to reschedule flights. Government officials have expressed surprise by this development and will likely call on the military to man the control towers and other functions until the situation can be resolved. The workers say they were promised pay for working at odd hours and on public holidays, but as of yet, that has not happened. And Dateline Washington. It remains to be seen how the Bush administration will respond to the financial crisis coming later this month. The Treasury will reach its debt ceiling, and that means the law does not allow it to borrow any more money to operate. Right now, the debt total is well over $8 trillion. The new chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank, Ben Bernanke, will then be put between a rock and a hard place. Does he raise interest rates and shut down the supply of money, which is the exact opposite strategy that was practiced for a long time by Alan Greenspan? Complicating this matter even more is the fact that overseas creditors don't seem to want to invest any more money into the United States because of its shaky financial situation. The government has to borrow nearly $2 billion a day to pay for operations.
Whenever decision is made, the value of the dollar is likely to drop, and if interest rates rise, any economic improvement could be shut down almost totally. This is your wake-up call Global News Update, brought to you by Alliance Financial Group, 381-8967.
Would you like to earn $500 to $2,500 a month? Have you been turned down for a real estate loan because of bad or poor credit? Would you like to invest in real estate but you don't know how to get started? All you need is the right strategy. Let Alliance Financial Group show you how with the free financial presentation today at 7 p.m. at the Airport Hilton Hotel. Seating is limited, so call 381-8967, 381-8967.
Black History Month continues at various branches of the St. Louis Public Library. Upcoming presentations include Timelines in Black on Monday, February 13th at the Julia Davis branch from 3 to 5 p.m. Also, see the movie Ruby Bridges on Tuesday, February 14th at the Baden branch from 4 to 6 p.m. Something for Black History Month from WGNU.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Tune in 2 to 4 weekday afternoons on AM 920 WGNU. Dial 1-800-DR-LAURA and let's go take on the day.
Coming up Thursday morning on the Wake Up Call, we get another visit from our friend Tyson Slocum, director of the Energy Program for Public Citizen. Last week, he testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee and talked about how recent mergers among oil producers have made it a lot easier for them to gouge the consumer. And higher prices attest to that. Here's what's really interesting, though. The committee also asked representatives from the leading oil companies to come and give testimony, but none of them showed up. Wonder why? We'll have Tyson Slocum's thoughts on that, too, and what to expect this year on that issue. Thursday morning at 9, here on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Real life, on the cutting edge. It's the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Time now for Eye on the Lou. Redistricting. Hand-picked school board members. Up-and-coming elections. Recalls. Battles in Jefferson City. Knock-down drag-offs at the Board of Aldermen. Who is who and what is what? That's what you get every Thursday at 7 a.m.
Welcome back to Eye on the Lou. Irene J. Smith, let's get to a couple more callers. And I want to give that phone. Can you give that phone number out? We have that phone number handy here to give out for people that want to call.
Yes, we do.
About this outrageous move of the Annie Malone parade.
Call 531-0120 and let Richard King know that you are outraged.
About
them moving the parade.
And act like this is that I'm so proud of you all when you call Washington, D.C. on your issues. This is right here. You should be outraged beyond description about this slap in the face to the community. You should be outraged. Sheila, good morning.
Good morning. And hi, Irene. How you doing?
Hello, Sheila. How are you? And how's Victor?
Victor's doing fine.
Tell him I said hi.
Okay, now, Natural Bridge is just as wide as Market Street. And as we all know, downtown closes up at 3 o'clock on a Friday. There's nobody down there. There's nothing to offer. And everybody should remember how we were done from East St. Louis when they wanted to close the bridge and didn't want us to come across the bridge to the Veil Prophet Parade.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So nobody can get. I'm not going to the parade. I'm not going downtown. And Aaron Phillips should remember where he came from. He used to go to Cobrillion School over there on Kennelly. So if he's going to have the parade downtown, then he's going to run back to the county anyway for his little safe haven.
He live in the county?
I don't know. I've got his address. I have to look and see.
All right.
But, you know, I'm not patronizing the parade. I knew how to get around the parade because my church was right there in the middle of it. So it was no problem for me. I enjoyed the parade.
And thanks for your call, Sheila.
Okay.
And there's something else going on. Excuse me. There's something else going on. That is a ray of hope in the city of St. Louis that ties into this, Irene.
I mean, the clergy concave on conclave on police brutality. I mean, all these groups coming together for what they are calling the Coretta Scott King Initiative. I mean, you have folks like all African People's Revolutionary Party and the Antioch District Association, the Metropolitan Congregations United coming together, the New Black Panthers, the St. Louis-based Organization Against Police Crimes and Political Repression, the Clergy Coalition.
I know. Who'd have thunk it?
Don't tell me what prayer won't do. St. Louis New Birth Mother Movement and the Universal African People's Party organization coming together.
They just gathered together just last Tuesday. They gathered together. They came up with this Coretta Scott King Initiative, and it's amazing come together. It's a ray of hope.
It is.
Okay, it's a ray of hope. We can hold our breath for a minute to see something positive, because, and I know that there were people that were at the meeting.
They wanted
to run out of the meeting, and people stayed, and people brought them back, and there was anger expressed, and that's cool. That's all working through the process. But the fact of the matter is that these people, a clergy group of people came together, and other organizations, and it's wonderful to see the organizations that were actually involved in the whole issue of police brutality.
Exactly. And that was hosted at Reverend Morris's church.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. And I'm so proud of him. I'm so proud of what they did. It's a fabulous thing. And it's a ray of hope. And the things that they're asking for: an economic boycott of downtown Maplewood, public recognition and empowerment of police officers, response from politicians about police brutality and other issues affecting the black community.
That's right.
Outstanding. Metropolitan-wide police pursuit policy, a church movement of unity to speak as one voice and one message. And my favorite and the most important, a civilian review oversight board for the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department. This is outstanding. This is absolutely outstanding.
Right. And in fact, they're going to be down at City Hall tomorrow at 10 o'clock. Come out and support Alderman Kennedy, who has been pushing the oversight board.
It's time. It's time.
The word on the street.
Word on the street.
He says, she says.
That's what I'm talking about.
The word
about.
On the street.
That's
girl,
right.
Did you hear about
the
know.
Word on the street?
I know.
Man, did you know the word on the street? I had no idea he was like that.
The word on the street.
That's the word on the street. Irene J. Smith, what we got? What's some words on the street?
Ooh, girl, so much stuff out there. They're saying Lida Cruson is running scared. She fears being recalled over a redevelopment bill. She had a bill on the board last week, and she had some visits from some of her constituents, about 20 of them. She put it on the informal counter.
Oh, so that's check and mate.
Oh, okay. I think it is.
Okay, check and mate.
And even though she told one of her colleagues, she was overheard saying, I'll take it off when they're not around. I don't think she's going to take it off anytime soon.
I don't think she's taking it off. You can say what you want out your mouth, but we know a move of capitulation when we seize it.
Yes,
all
we
right?
do. Yes,
let,
we
let,
do.
Let's jump to number four.
Ooh, the underground boycott of the Animal Lawn Home Day
Word
Parade.
Word on the street, girl.
Word on the street.
Word
is that there is a tremendous underground boycott of the Animal Lawn Day Parade going on. And for people who want to talk about that this may hurt the home, just take your money and send it right on to the home.
If you want to send money, if you want to send the money to the home, if you're concerned about that, send the money to the home. But the boycott is saying, I'm not going. Black people are saying, I'm not going to the Animal Lawn.
Exactly.
And we're going to give you more on that when we're coming. How about number six?
Ooh, this is a lot of discussion about this from individuals who are involved in planning. Supposedly, Slay and Company are already planning to move another North Side ward in the next redistricting, okay? And not to South Side. They're saying they're going to shift the ward downtown.
And that ward, a word on the street is that ward.
That word on the street is that ward is going to be the first ward.
Ain't that some stuff? That's why y'all have to be ever vigilant. That's why folks need to be ever vigilant, because someone is always trying to come and take your stuff. This move of the Animal Lawn Parade ties right into this. Mm-hmm. Ties right into this. Number three. Ooh.
Man, this is disturbing to me. Mm-hmm. Suspected kickbacks and influence peddling by several African-American aldermen. and namely, it's supposedly the 3rd Ward, the 5th, and the 19th Ward, is being looked into by the feds, along with one recalled white alderman out of the 24th Ward, and that would be Tom Bauer.
Ouch.
So that's what the word is. You know, some individuals are talking about the feds are looking into this influence peddling.
Ouch.
With respect to development in those wards.
Number two, please.
Oh, now here we go. Mr. Slay, he is trying to sell the city's property that the street department is on over on Hampton, you know, where the MSD was. And supposedly he's doing this without any input from the comptroller. And you all remember what happened with the first plan on the stadium where the comptroller's office was not involved.
Word on the street, girl. What's this about city building inspectors?
Well, just have to be sitting at the right place at the right time. Well, you could pick up a lot of information in Central West End, over in North St. Louis, sitting in restaurants. Supposedly, a few St. Louis city inspectors are being videotaped and followed for not giving the city a full day's work for the pay.
Heads up, camera watching you. I wish they'd use some of those cameras, too, on some police officers, too, if we're going to be videotaping folks.
So the question is, what's up with the building division?
Oh,
you better watch out. If you're getting paid, do your work.
There you go.
Don't go home after you leave City Hall.
There you go. Word on the street. Well, that wraps it up for another week, Miss Irene J. Smith. We will be back. Same time, same place next week?
Yes, we will.
All right, and if you have any scoops that you want to give us, if you have some word on the street, all you got to do is email us at wordonthestreet@lizbrown.com. That's wordonthestreet@lizbrown.com. You got some tidbits out there? You've been hanging around in North St. Louis restaurants or in the Central West End or South Side? Email us at wordonthestreet.com.
And it is word on the street. This is not Irene and Liz saying. This is what the word is on the street.
Word on the street, word on the street at LizBrown.com. Stay with me, folks. I'll be back with Justice for Reggie. Hang on.
The issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger. We are making some major strides in the battle against cancer.
This is the first time that we've seen a decrease in the number of cancer deaths in the United States.
Lynn Reese with the National Cancer Institute's on a new study that's out today. It shows overall the numbers of people who died from the most common forms of cancer, lung, breast, colorectal, and prostate are down. One reason? Fewer of us are smoking. There's a break in the case of a Massachusetts woman and her infant daughter found shot to death in their home. The woman's husband, Neil Entwistle, was arrested in his native England today. He's charged in their murders. He'd have to be extradited first, though, to stand trial in the U.S.
Typically, the only issue in extradition is whether or not the person who has been detained is the same person being sought.
Defense attorney Mary Ames. Now, authorities in Middlesex County, Massachusetts, believe Entwistle flew to London about a day before the bodies were discovered. His vehicle was found at Boston's Logan Airport. Will it be business as usual today at the Russell Senate Office Building? It sure wasn't last night. ABC's Pam Coulter in Washington.
200 people spent 3 hours quarantined in an underground parking garage, but Senate press aide Coy Knobel says no one griped or panicked.
It looked like typical Washington, D.C. Everyone had their cell phone out and were calling, you know, others.
As hazmat teams set up decontamination tents, the evacuees played cards and listened to music on a car radio. In a post-9/11 world, Aaron Ronshine has learned to take it all in stride.
This is part of living in the city.
The false alarm apparently triggered by a cleaning agent or a faulty sensor. Pam Coulter, ABC News, Capitol Hill.
First the Pope, later the Italian Premier Laura Bush's meeting and greeting some of Italy's VIPs. She's leading the U.S. delegation to the Olympic Games in Torino. Well, they didn't have the most nominations going in, but U2 took the most Grammys home last night. The Irish Rockers won 5 awards, including 2 of the Biggie Song of the Year and Album of the Year. This is ABC News.
Harry, what are you doing in our living room shirtless?
Don't call me Harry. My name is Thor, Prince of the Night.
Thor?
Yes, my temptress. I have traveled far to find you this treasure.
What treasure?
A treasure as unique as you, my damsel.
A diamond right-hand ring for Valentine's Day?
Yes, surrender to me.
Oh, Thor.
Anyone can be a romantic hero this Valentine's Day. Give her a diamond right-hand ring that shows you know who she really is.
go to adiamondisforever.com/valentine and find the perfect style for her.
Valentine's Day is next Tuesday, and Kohl's I Love to Save sale has everything you love for less, plus power hours. Night Owls save even more Friday, 3 to 11 p.m. Early Birds Saturday, 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. Like an extra 15% off diamond and sterling silver jewelry, already 60% off. 50 to 60% off Daisy Fuentes, Nine & Company, and Access Sportswear. And men's solid pique polos for just $9.99. What's not to love? The I Love to Save sale this Friday and Saturday only at Kohl's. Expect great things.
The Pakistani army says it's in control of the northwestern city where a suicide bombing ripped through a Shiite Muslim procession. At least 22 people were killed and dozens were injured. The victims of the bombing were leaving a mosque heading for a bazaar. Yuck. ABC's Daniela Bellotta tells us you're never really going to know what you could find in a bowl of soup.
A woman in Nashville, Tennessee, claims her 89-year-old mother spooned a dead mouse into her mouth from a bowl of Campbell's bean with bacon soup. Is it a cooked-up tale like the finger in the bowl of Wendy's chili? A spokesman for the Campbell's Soup Company says it's unlikely the rodent got into the can during manufacturing because production is closely monitored at the North Carolina plant where the soup was made. The company says, however, it would like to examine the can and its contents, which the family says it's keeping stored in a freezer. Daniela Bellotta, ABC News.
Give that soup a stir before you eat it. I'm Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Ransmeyer with your WGNU news update for the 8 o'clock hour. In the news this Thursday, the Missouri Highway Patrol is still searching for a tractor-trailer that struck a patrol car and left the scene. Around 7:45 yesterday morning, a Highway Patrol trooper was investigating another accident on westbound I-44 near Sullivan when the tractor-trailer struck the trooper's car and kept going. The trooper suffered non-life-threatening injuries. The vehicle has a green tractor with a sleeper berth and an air spoiler that wraps around the sides of the truck, pulling a white box-style trailer and most likely having light damage to its left side. Anyone with information is asked to call the Missouri Highway Patrol at 573-368-2345. Slick road conditions are being blamed for a school bus accident in St. Charles County. A school bus transporting 70 Orchard Farm Middle School students slid off the roadway along Highway 94 near Highway V yesterday morning. The students were then transferred onto another bus and taken to school. The bus driver reportedly swerved to avoid another accident and ended up in a ditch. None of the students were seriously injured. Decentralizing the state's emissions testing program could be more costly to motorists. That's the message from Stephen Picorni, the president and general manager of Sun Auto Services in Jennings.
There are some cars out there that have been tested as many as 10 times or better. And if a car would be tested 10 times, you do understand that the first test they would pay for, the second they would not, but the third and the fifth and the seventh and the ninth, they would be paying whatever the fee is each time.
The current system allows for a vehicle to be retested for an unlimited amount of times free of charge for 30 days. Pending legislation is calling for emissions testing to be conducted at repair shops. Finally this hour, the American Red Cross says it has raised enough donations to meet the cost of its 2005 hurricane response. Red Cross officials say current donations and pledges will cover the more than $2 billion cost of the response to Hurricane Katrina and the season's other storms. The local Red Cross chapter sent more than 50 volunteers to the Gulf Coast and provided assistance to more than 5,700 people displaced by the storm. This WGNU News Report is brought to you by Helzberg Diamonds. Only 5 days until Valentine's Day, be your hero with one of over 500 gifts under $100 from Helzberg Diamonds. Shop online or find the nearest store at Helzberg.com. Helzberg Diamonds, moments that sparkle. That's your look at local news for the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeyer for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour, 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by the St. Louis Boat Show. Westbound 270 between 159 and 157 over on the Illinois side. There's an accident involving a tractor-trailer and a medical emergency cruiser expected to be on the scene through the morning rush. There's about a one-mile jam through the accident site at this hour. Westbound 40 between 270 and Mason. Look for an accident. Been cleared to the shoulder, but there may be some delays. Eastbound 44 between Bowles and the Merrimack River Bridge. Look for slow traffic in pockets. Eastbound 40 between 141 and Mason Road. Look for slow traffic eastbound 70 from 270 all the way into St. Charles Rock Road. Expect delays this hour. Northbound 270 from Gravois all the way into Doherty Ferry. Look for slow traffic in pockets. Eastbound 70 between Bryan and 79. Look for heavy volume going on there. Eastbound 40 between Ballas and Lindbergh. It is slow. Westbound 40 between Hampton and Hanley. Look for delays as well. Westbound 70 between Cypress and Lindbergh. There's an object in the roadway believed to be bricks, so use caution as you roll up to that area. Northbound 55 at 4500 South Broadway in Potomac. Look for very heavy volume going on there. Westbound 64 at Bow Avenue all the way onto the PSB. You can expect slow traffic. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from the Illinois Bank onto Laclede's Landing. It is slow. Northbound Route 3 from Monsanto onto the approaches of the Poplar Street Bridge. Expect slow traffic this hour. North Warson at Liberty. There's a structure fire. Warson is shut down south of Page, so you need to use Ashby as an alternate. Holloway and Baxter, there is a report of an accident as well. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by the St. Louis Boat Show. Get a taste of summer at the St. Louis Boat and Sports Show, February 7th through the 12th at America Center. Visit stlouisboatshow.com for details. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Saturday. For today, look for mostly sunny skies this morning and early afternoon, becoming partly cloudy throughout the day with a high around 40 this evening. Mostly cloudy, not quite as cold. Scattered flurries after midnight with a low in the upper 20s. Friday, pretty much the same. Mostly cloudy, scattered flurries, high in the upper 30s. Friday evening, mostly cloudy, flurries yet again with a low in the lower 20s. And on Saturday, mostly cloudy, flurries are possible with a high in the mid-30s. Currently in the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have sunshine and 22 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting sunny skies and 20, but the wind chill makes it feel like it's 11 outside. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. That's up next. It's Justice for Reggie with Liz and Jamala. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Young brothers, help me understand. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Young brothers, it is time for us to use our power. Please do not beg for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you. The people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made. If you take a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that the blow made.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal citizenship.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Brothers, 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 broth
Welcome, 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 welcome. It's Thursday. It's 8 o'clock. It is time for Justice for Reggie. I am joined in the studio, Jamala Rogers. Good morning.
Good morning, Liz. How are you?
I'm outstanding. How are you?
Pretty good.
All right. Let us talk about, let's begin at the beginning. Let's talk about why we're here this morning and every Thursday morning.
We are here because we are trying to save the life of a brother in particular, but also to raise the consciousness about the death penalty in general. And the young man that we're talking about is Reggie Clemens, who was a co-defendant in the Chain of Rocks murder case. This emanated from an incident on the bridge, Chain of Rocks Bridge, in 1991, and ended up four young men on the bridge who all got implicated for the murder of two young white girls, Julie and Robin Carey. And from all information and data that we have, initially the white cousin of the two, you know, confessed to the murder, took a lie detector test and failed. Yet, you know, the scenario ended up with four of them, four of the boys being charged, convicted, and now one of them has actually been executed. So weren't able to mount what I think would have been the kind of offenses that we needed to save Marlon, but we certainly have the opportunity to do it now with Reggie Clemens. And so we have a whole campaign going on. We have petitions. We have a, you know, hip-hop competition to bring the young folks in. And so there's a faceted strategy that's going on right now to save Reggie's life. So,
and also this is a case, another reason why we're aside from the reasons that you've articulated, that it is that this case is so important, is that it is, I dare say, a perfect example of all of the things that can go wrong in a trial and all of the reasons why the death penalty can never be an option in this country because of all of the shortcomings of human beings.
And the big one being racism that colors all of that.
Absolutely. We have racism, we have ineffective assistance of counsel, we have police brutality, we have prosecutorial misconduct, and we had a prosecutor that was also fixing to try to get a job advancement.
Exactly.
So it's and if you have all of those factors, Jamala, how can you say that a person is being executed fairly? You can't.
You can't. You can't. And we already have one example of that with the case of Larry Griffin, who we still have not heard, you know, about the disposition of that case from Jennifer Joyce's office. So, you know, that case was 1995. It's over 10 years old. And, you know, I don't know whether people are slow to admitting that there were some errors. But eventually, and even as some of us have looked at the initial investigation, and Christina Swarns, who we had on the show last week, was a part of the University of Michigan's investigation of the Larry Griffin case. So, as you say, you know, when you make a mistake like that, a fatal mistake, there's no turning back. It's like it's a done deal and it's a oops. But meanwhile, people's families have been, you know, terribly wronged, and so we're really trying to avoid that by highlighting all the contradictions and flaws in the system.
And the way we're going to do this is every single week we are going to be talking about this case. And also, if we can, very quickly before we get to our guests and our specific issue this hour, Jamala, is tell people about an option that they have to get involved in this campaign, because there's an ongoing petition drive. Is that right?
There's an ongoing petition drive.
And what is this petition, and what does it mean?
At this point, because Reggie has exhausted all of his legal claims, I mean, here and there, there might be some other things that, you know, will be thrown into the mix. But, you know, he is in the clemency phase, which means that now only the governor, and that's Governor Matt Blunt, can intervene in his behalf. And so the petitions are asking that Governor Blunt look at the facts of the case and give the case the serious consideration that it is due. And so we've been collecting signatures, and people can get can sign online at www.justiceforreggie.com, or they can contact us and get petitions at 367-5959.
And there are people on the street every day out there getting sick.
It's been amazing. You know, when I went to the meeting of the church where the initiative, the Coretta Scott King initiative, came out.
And that's an amazing thing.
Yeah, it's amazing. I came with my board, and there were three other people there. So I'm like, okay, I don't have to do this. So
people are on their job.
They're on their job.
On their job.
And just so that people know, next week, every day, we're going to be at the Fox for the Mother Deer program, because we know folks are going to be coming out, and we'll be there getting signatures. And so if people are going there to see Mother Deer Goes to Jail, you might want to take a half hour and be out there with us. But, you know, we will definitely be out there getting signatures.
And we're going to do a count.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do a count, and that's something that people really need to know, mm-hmm. so that we can, you know, feel the pulse
right.
of this.
And so just so that people know, if you have full sheets, please bring them in to the next campaign meeting, which is Monday at 7 o'clock at the Rowan Community Center, 1401 Rowan. So we're trying to get all of them in. I know people have been working hard, and they've got full sheets and sort of holding on to them.
Mm-hmm.
We need to get them in for the count.
Okay, very good. And every week, Jamala, we try to, because the death penalty and because the criminal justice system is so huge, there are just so many components to it, and despite all of the thousands of hours of TV, so-called dedicated to the criminal justice system, TV doesn't begin to tell you the truth about what happens in our criminal justice system. And so part of this show is also about demystifying what happens in the criminal justice system, making it real about what happens in the criminal justice system, and providing an explanation as to how people end up in the situation that Reggie is in right now. Because it is not by happen chance that this has happened.
Right, right.
And so this week we're going to focus on the jury selection. We're going to talk about how that happens, the problems with it, and it's like every problem that exists in society is reflected with dire consequences in the pools of people that end up making the decision on mm-hmm. whether someone lives or dies.
Exactly.
And we're going to have a conversation with two attorneys, and they are
Michelle Sharandy, and I think she'll introduce the other attorney, but these are attorneys that have been working on Reggie's case for at least the last decade.
Very good. And we have Michelle Sharandy and Kim Han. Both of them are with Simpson, Thatcher, and Bartlett, and both of them are joining us from New York. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Very good. And who am I talking to?
This is Michelle Sharandy and my colleague Kim Han. We're both attorneys at Simpson, Thatcher, and we represent Reggie Clemens.
Very good. We were talking about the thing that we wanted to focus on this morning is the jury selection component. Can you start at the beginning of why there's a jury selection and how it happens?
Well, in every case, you know, you have a jury, and it's obviously the most crucial part of the case because these are the people who decide, you know, the ultimate outcome. And what's unique about a death penalty case is that you have a special part of what's called voir dire, where you get to ask questions of the jury, and that special part is called death qualification. And in the death qualification part of the jury selection process, it's an opportunity to remove potential jurors who would automatically vote against the imposition of a death sentence.
And for every attorney, Michelle, this is do or die. This, when you pick a jury, that is, like you said, that is really, really, really going to have a huge influence on how this case is going to turn out.
Absolutely.
And so you want fair-minded people. You want people. What are the things that you want from people to ensure that your client gets a fair trial?
You know, you touched on it already, fair-minded, open, and willing and able to perform their duties. And, you know, listening to the evidence and following the instructions. You know, it's important for a jury not to go and do research on their own or to, you know, go to the scene of the crime, things like that. So they need to be able to follow instructions and to just be fair and open-minded.
And you ask sometimes very, very personal questions of people because you also have to, you have a very short window of time to get into the head of people you've never met before. You know, what are your proclivities towards race? What are your proclivities towards gender? And things like that as well. What's your economic situation? How do you feel about police? How do you feel about people that are accused of crimes, right?
Absolutely. And you also want, you know, jurors that are selected from a fair cross-section of the community. So, you know, you want to be able to have people of different races, religions, sex, economic status, and that's important so that you're tried by a jury of your peers.
And it is a guessing game in a lot of respects as well. You're trying to read body language. You're trying to be like Sister Cleo here, trying to read the minds of people that are sitting there because you need to know, in a very short window of opportunity, what type of human beings you're dealing with.
Correct. Absolutely. And it's even more crucial, as I said before, in a death case because you want to know what people's views are regarding the death penalty.
So give us some of the questions that you ask people in the death qualification component of the voir dire selection.
I mean, the key thing is to know whether somebody is, you know, opposed for religious or other reasons to imposing the death penalty or whether, you know, they have an open mind. The law is very clear that somebody who cannot impose the death penalty cannot be part of a jury that is going to have to perform that sentencing duty. So if you're opposed to giving the death penalty, you are automatically struck from a death penalty case. And, you know, as a result of that, what you end up with is you end up with a jury that is, you know, predisposed towards a death sentence.
And the other, conversely, Michelle, if someone says, hell yes, I believe in the death penalty, absolutely, yes, ma'am, I do believe in the death penalty, you can't disqualify him for that kind of enthusiasm for the death penalty.
You know, the law is a little bit vague on that point. I mean, enthusiasm for the death penalty, then, you know, you can be included. But if you said, I would always vote for a death sentence no matter what, then that person would likely be struck.
And the odds of getting someone that says that as opposed to the odds of getting someone that says, I could never impose the death penalty are few and far between, right?
Right.
So most of the time we just get an enthusiasm that doesn't reach quite the level of that. And we can't strike those people off the jury panel.
Right.
Mm. So some other issue, and so, okay, continue to take us through the death qualification component.
Well, one sort of important thing about death qualification is, like Michelle said, you're not supposed to serve on a jury if you're absolutely opposed to the death penalty. But what the problem with that is prosecutors use that to exclude people who, like normal people, have qualms about the death penalty. I mean, most people aren't completely gung-ho about the death penalty. So obviously most people recognize that it's only for the most severe crimes. You know, even if you agree with the death penalty, you don't agree that it's warranted in every case. And what happens during this death qualification stage is if you express some uncertainty, a little bit of doubt, then prosecutors use that as a way to get those people off the jury. So really what oftentimes you're left with is a jury that is really, really strongly in favor of the death penalty.
And is it fair to say that when you have, most of the time when you're death qualifying a case, most of the time that it's a death penalty case, that the prosecutor that's doing this is either hugely experienced or experienced enough, whereas on the other side of the aisle, you have no idea about the experiential level of the defense attorney?
Yeah, I mean, in Reggie's case, you know, this prosecutor was a seasoned prosecutor who had tried many death penalty cases, whereas Reggie's defense counsel had tried one death case before. I mean, that is just a, you know, striking contrast, and it really matters because, you know, picking the jury, as you pointed out, is so crucial. So you need to have experience in knowing the types of questions to ask and being able to, you know, understand when it's proper to strike jurors because of their views on the death penalty.
And isn't there also a skill level that an attorney needs to have, that if you're a seasoned defense attorney that and a particularly a specially educated and trained death penalty defense attorney, you also have to have the ability to rehabilitate a potential juror that the prosecutor is trying to strike off the jury. Could you explain to us what rehabilitation is of a juror?
Sure, and that's a really good point. I mean, what often happens in this kind of situation is that you'll have a prosecutor who focuses on somebody that they don't want on the jury, and they try to ask questions to show that that person could not impose the death penalty and that they are not death qualified. So, you know, they'll target, for example, minorities and women to try to get them off the jury, and they'll ask them, you know, often many more questions than other jurors, and try to show that that juror, you know, is not death qualified. And then it is the defense counsel's obligation to rehabilitate, to ask questions to show that the person is able to vote for the death sentence. And this is actually another area that it was crucial in Reggie's case. There was one juror who was struck by the prosecutor. He was asked a number of questions about his ability to impose the death sentence. He was an African-American male, and the prosecutor, you know, asked him many more questions than other jurors, and then tried to strike him, saying he was not death qualified. The defense was actually able to rehabilitate him, but ultimately this juror was struck because the judge had recalled that he was not able to impose the death sentence.
And I think that we also have to throw into that the understanding of this is that a prosecutor, they don't just say, with the exception of their automatic strikes, and even those they have to explain. It's the judge that makes the final decision on whether both parties request that people get struck, and then the judge has to weigh in based upon the arguments of both people as to whether or not an individual is going to be struck.
Correct.
So that's another reason why a defense attorney has to know what they're doing, because a prosecutor can say, I'm striking him for this, this, and this, and the defense attorney doesn't say, but judge, this, this, and this, the person gets struck.
Right. And you know, a seasoned defense attorney would know that you would want to have individual questioning of each juror.
There you go.
But we didn't have that in Reggie's case.
Excuse me?
There was jurors were put on a panel and asked questions in front of other jurors. You never want that to happen in this kind of high-profile case, because then comments that are made, prejudicial comments that are made, are then basically said in front of other jurors, jurors who are ultimately put on the case. And so you get prejudicial comments, from potential jurors that really actually taint your jury pool.
And speaking of the prejudicial comments, was not there a investigator from Nails Moss's camp that was a prospective juror?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And we're going to talk about that when we come back. We have to take a break. This is Liz Brown. I'm here with Jamala Rogers. This is Justice for Reggie Thursday. We are talking to two attorneys that are that have been on Reggie's case for 10 years. They're from Simpson, Thatcher, and Bartlett. They're joining us from New York. I'm Liz Brown. We're taking a break. Stay with us.
Good morning, St. Louis. 31 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by your Greater St. Louis area Toyota dealers. Westbound 270 between Illinois 159 and 157. Look for an accident involving a tractor trailer and a medical emergency. Crews are expected to be on the scene throughout the morning rush. There's about a mile jam back at the accident site in both directions. 44 at Jefferson. Look for no problems to report. Northbound 55 from Imperial Main to Green Park. Everything's on the move. Eastbound 44 from Bowles to the Merrimack River Bridge. Look for slow traffic in pockets. Northbound 270 from Gravois to Doherty Ferry. It is slow in pockets as well. Eastbound 70 at 79 at traffic is finally easing. Eastbound 40 between Spading and Lindbergh. Look for slow traffic. Westbound 40 between McCausland and Hanley. Expect delays. Northbound 55 at 4500 South Broadway and Potomac. Look for slow traffic. Westbound 40 between 270 and Mason. Look for slow traffic due to an earlier accident. Eastbound 70 at Grand. There's a disabled vehicle. Left lane is Brock. Southbound 270 between Olive and Ladue. Look for slow traffic. Westbound 5570 from Exchange onto the PSB. Expect delays. Westbound 64 between Bow Avenue and the PSB. Look for delays as well. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from the Illinois side all the way on to Laclede's Landing. Look for slow traffic in northbound Route 3 from Monsanto onto the approaches of the Poplar Street Bridge. Look for slow traffic as well. And North Warson at Liberty, there's a structure fire. Warson is shut down south of Page. You can use Ashby as an alternate. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by your Greater St. Louis area Toyota dealers. Toyota owners, tires are an important part of your car. Through February, purchase four tires from your St. Louis Metro Toyota dealer and receive three complimentary oil changes. Toyota, moving you forward. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Saturday. Mostly sunny this morning and early afternoon, becoming partly cloudy by the afternoon with a high around 40 this evening. Not quite as cold. Mostly cloudy with scattered flurries after midnight. The low should be in the upper 20s. Moving on to Friday, mostly cloudy, pretty much the same, scattered flurries throughout the afternoon with a high in the upper 30s. Friday evening, mostly cloudy, scattered flurries with a low in the lower 20s. And then on Saturday, cloudy again, flurries are possible with a high in the mid-30s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 22 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 20, both under sunny conditions, but the wind chill outside makes it feel like it's 11. So bundle up if you're going out to the bus stop. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU. Is the other station bringing you down? You know, giving you the blues? Hey, don't forget, we're still talking. To get in on the conversation, just call 314-454-0400 or toll free 1-877-920-WGNU. You never know, your comic could be as good as any power play.
You don't have to travel all the way to the mall to visit your Sears. Why don't you visit the only black-owned and operated Sears located at 3425 Union. That's 3425 Union. Sears, where else?
Where else are you going to get your washer, your dryer, your refrigerator, your stove, your DVD player, your, how about your VCR-DVD combo? You're going to get them at the Sears right there at Union and Natural Bridge. I'm telling you, the only black-owned and operated Sears, the only full-service Sears in the entire city of St. Louis. You don't have to take out a bank loan to get to the mall and get to a Sears because you have it right here in your community. Get on down to Sears. Get your shop on. The customer service is unbelievable. Sears, get your shop on and tell them I told you to.
Hotep, this is Pastor Ray Higgins, and I would like to invite you to tune in to the On One Accord broadcast every Sunday morning from 6 to 8:30 a.m. for the best in liberated gospel music, live talk radio, and powerful messages about truth and right spirituality. Join me right here on WGNU 920 a.m. every Sunday morning from 6 to 8:30 a.m., and let's set our people free. Hotep.
Thursday morning on the Wake Up Call, we get another visit from our friend Tyson Slocum, director of the Energy Program for Public Citizen. Last week, he testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee and talked about how recent mergers among oil producers have made it a lot easier for them to gouge the consumer, and higher prices attest to that. Here's what's really interesting, though. The committee also asked representatives from the leading oil companies to come and give testimony, but none of them showed up. Wonder why? We'll have Tyson Slocum's thoughts on that, too, and what to expect this year on that issue. Thursday morning at 9, here on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. Anywhere in the world at WGNU.net, the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
I wish I didn't get so weak. Oh, baby, just to hear you speak. Makes me argue just to see how much you're in love with me. Be like a queen, a queen upon her throne.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to our Justice for Reggie Hour. I'm here with Jamala Rogers, and we are talking about the the jury selection in a death penalty case, the importance of it, the significance of having someone with experience there, and the consequences of not having that person there. We're talking to two attorneys from New York. They are both attorneys that have been on Reggie's case for 10 years. Michelle Sherrandy and Kim Hand, they are with Simpson, Thatcher, and Bartlett. Welcome back. I would love to continue to explore what Jamala started when before the break. Jamala, when you...
Yeah, this was the potential juror that was actually an investigator for Nails Moss.
And Michelle or Kim, can you talk to us about, describe to us what happened in that trial when the investigator for the prosecutor was on the jury panel? You were talking about how important it is that there be an individual voir dire so that other jurors cannot hear what other jurors are saying and they don't taint the jury pool. Well, this is almost like this is like the perfect example of why you're supposed to do individual voir dires.
Well, this man actually, as Jamal mentioned, was an investigator. He was part of the investigation initial search the night of the incident. And when he showed up for jury service, the prosecutor knew him. I mean, the prosecutor was there on the bridge with him during the investigation, and he should have immediately been told to leave. But instead, the prosecutor allowed him to sort of hang out with the other jurors and be on the jury panel for a while.
But wait a minute, can I ask you one quick question? Because I know when I select jurors, the juries, the first thing that you ask, and it's, you always feel kind of foolish, saying, well, does anybody here know me? Does anybody here know the prosecutor? Was that question ever asked of this jury pool?
It wasn't asked to this man until well into the jury selection proceedings.
And probably so, by design.
Yeah. So he, you know, he was able to spend time with these other jurors, say things to them, and then was questioned about it later during the jury selection in front of all the jurors and said, you know, that he had formed the opinion that whoever did this are dirty, rotten people. They should get everything they've got coming to them. And what's really outrageous about this is not only was he involved in the investigation, but the prosecutor knew this. I mean, like I said, he was on the bridge during the investigation with the prosecutor. And another thing that's, you know, interesting and troubling is that actually this person had actually met the victims and the cousin. He was a firefighter, and they had toured his firehouse. So he had all sorts of personal impressions of them and then impressions from the investigation, and yet was allowed to stay on this jury panel until fairly late in the proceedings.
And was there, because one of the technical components of trying a case and making certain that a case is, you're trying a case while it's kept going on, and you're also trying it for the appeal, so you're trying to preserve your evidence so that you have an appealable issue if you lose the case. Was there ever an objection made in order to preserve this issue by the defense attorney that was representing Reggie?
He actually did object in this instance to this particular person. But the judge wasn't convinced, shockingly. But, you know, one of the problems is that in Reggie's case, and I know we discussed it before, is that oftentimes objections weren't made and issues weren't preserved. This is one of the few times the objection was actually made. But, you know, it's a real problem in this case that the lawyers did not make objections. And
that the prosecutor wasn't punished for this. I mean, this is the reason why you stop the trial and you start all over again.
Basis for a mistrial.
I would have been hollering at the moon on this, that the prosecutor's own investigator was there and he didn't say anything. You get a mistrial at this point.
I agree. I mean, it's really shocking when you read the record in this case, from jury selection, you know, all the way to the closing arguments. Over and over, this kind of thing happens, and over, there are so many things that you think this trial should stop right now. There should have been a mistrial. I mean, the prosecutor was found to be in criminal contempt for his behavior during this trial, and still, there was not a mistrial declared. Liz, I do think it's very important for people to know that there were actually two jury issues that were where we had success on appeal. We actually were able in the district court to get Reggie's death sentence overturned because of a finding about improper jury questioning. The district court found that six jurors who were actually qualified to serve on the on Reggie's jury were improperly struck, and because of that, actually overturned the death sentence. That was appealed by the state, and in a 2-1 decision, the district court reinstated the death penalty. But, you know, this is, you know, jury selection, it is very, very difficult to get an appellate court to rule on something that's so much a credibility determination. But we actually were able, because of the, you know, egregious questions that were asked of the jury, to get, you know, Reggie's death sentence overturned initially, even though we ultimately lost that issue on appeal.
Give us some examples of the egregious questions that were asked.
The key thing was improper hypotheticals. The jurors were asked whether they could impose the death sentence in a situation where Missouri law does not allow for a death sentence. So they were asked basically about, you know, imposing the death sentence where it's just not even allowed.
And then when they say that, when they said that they couldn't impose the death penalty, then the prosecutor said, oh, okay, well, then we've got to strike you from this jury.
Absolutely, and that happened for six jurors.
And let me guess the race of the jurors.
You know, we're trying to investigate that, and we don't have.
I'll tell you where my money is. I'll tell you where my money is.
We'll let you know, but you very well might be correct. We do know that one juror who was struck was definitely African American, and as I said, we're looking into the race of the other ones.
But you know, in the end, the jury that Reggie got, there were only two African Americans on the jury, and that, I mean, as you know, that doesn't reflect the population of St. Louis County, and the judge, even on the record, said, well, in my experience, usually, you know, at least half the jurors are African American, and even the judge admitted on the record that something seemed wrong to him about the composition of Reggie's jury, and yet it was still allowed to they were still allowed to proceed with the trial.
And who was the judge in this case? Do you remember the name?
Judge Peek.
Oh, all right. We're going to take a break, folks. We're going to take a break. This is Justice for Reggie Hour. I'm here with Jamala Rogers. We're talking about Reginald Clemens' case, and we're talking about the specific component of it, the jury selection. My name is Liz Brown. We're taking a break. 454-0400 is the phone number. 454-6609 is the fax. We'll be back.
Hello, morning. Now, when does the fun begin?
The Wake Up Call Global News Update is brought to you this hour by
Alliance Financial Group. How do the rich get rich? Let Alliance Financial Group show you how. Call 381-8967.
This is your Wake Up Call Global News Update. Dateline, Washington. A new audit of money earmarked for Iraq reconstruction has revealed an outrageous misuse of tens of millions of dollars. The audit came out yesterday from the U.S. Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction. It paints a picture of a Wild West atmosphere where money was thrown around like handfuls of sand. Huge sums of money were paid out in cash with no supervision or paperwork. At least 2,000 contracts were found to be problematic to the tune of $88 million. In one case, an American soldier gambled away $40,000 when he took the Iraqi Olympic boxing team to the Philippines. Another contracting officer kept some $2 million cash in a safe in his bathroom. Another kept over $500,000 in cash in his footlocker. Cash was stolen during attacks by insurgents but never reported. Over $600,000 was paid to fix an elevator in the hospital in Hillia, but the work was never done, and then a few months later, the elevator crashed and three people were killed. Some $3 million worth of cars and trucks can't be located because no paper documentation for them was ever done, but the supplier did get paid. After the president made his mission accomplished speech, tons of $100 bills stacked on pallets were flown into the country to help jumpstart the reconstruction efforts. One delivery contained $1.5 billion. That's the largest amount of money ever paid out by the Federal Reserve Bank at a single time. This is your wake-up call global news update, brought to you by Alliance Financial Group, 381-8967.
Would you like to earn $500 to $2,500 a month? Have you been turned down for a real estate loan because of bad or poor credit? Would you like to invest in real estate but you don't know how to get started? All you need is the right strategy. Let Alliance Financial Group show you how with a free financial presentation today at 7 p.m. at the Airport Hilton Hotel. Seating is limited, so call 381-8967, 381-8967.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger on AM 920 WGNU, the station that discusses what matters the most to you. Join me from 2 to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday.
For the past several years, you've heard WGNU's community calendar of events going on in and around the area. Ever wonder where the information comes from? The majority of it comes from our listening audience. If your nonprofit organization would like help promoting its events and ongoing operations free of charge, send all necessary information to calendar at WGNU.com. Please send the correspondence 2 weeks prior to any events. WGNU reserves the right to edit or reject submissions for reasons of time and content.
Coming up Thursday morning on the Wake Up Call, we get another visit from our friend Tyson Slocum, Director of the Energy Program for Public Citizen. Last week, he testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee and talked about how recent mergers among oil producers have made it a lot easier for them to gouge the consumer, and higher prices attest to that. Here's what's really interesting, though. The committee also asked representatives from the leading oil companies to come and give testimony, but none of them showed up. Wonder why? We'll have Tyson Slocum's thoughts on that, too, and what to expect this year on that issue. Thursday morning at 9, here on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. This is the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. Don't leave home without it.
All that I know, I thank my God. I've got something within me. Oh, something within me, Lord, that I can't explain. All I know, I thank my God, I've got something within me.
Welcome back. This is Liz Brown. I'm here with Jamala Rogers. This is Justice for Reggie Thursday, and we're talking to two attorneys that have been on Reginald Clemens' death case for over 10 years. They're with Simpson, Thatcher, and Bartlett. Michelle and Kim, welcome back.
Thank you.
So we have about 6 minutes left here. Continue to take us through, or at least point out for us, some of the more egregious, voir dire issues that arose in Reggie's case.
Well, really, the main ones, you know, we focused on, it's the composition of the jury, only two African-American jurors, and the prosecutor's strategy of asking these improper questions. One reason the prosecutor did that is a lot of these jurors during jury selection expressed some reluctance to impose the death penalty unless the prosecutor could show that Reggie pushed the girls off the bridge.
Fair enough.
They were really, you know, that didn't sit right with them that you could impose the death penalty in that situation. So this hypothetical that the prosecutor asked a lot of these jurors sort of it took out the intent element that's necessary in order to give someone the death penalty in Missouri. And as a result, he was able to strike people who said, I wouldn't impose a death penalty in a situation where Missouri law doesn't even allow you to impose a death penalty. But he was also able to sort of persuade the jurors that were remaining that Missouri law allowed the death penalty in situations where it didn't. And it was almost sort of pre-arguing his closing argument, but giving people the impression that Missouri law required a lower standard than was required for the death penalty. And one of the reasons that the whole jury selection process is so important is that in a situation like this where you have an African-American defendant and a white victim, studies have shown that in Missouri in particular, that African-Americans accused of killing white victims are 5 times more likely to be charged with capital murder. In other words, 5 times more likely to be charged with death penalty as their punishment than African-Americans who are accused of killing African-Americans. So from beginning to end, it's so important to get a fair cross-section of the community on the jury, because if you don't, you're left with a situation where it's much more likely, particularly with an African-American defendant, it's much more likely that person will end up with the death penalty.
And you talk about the studies, and of course there have been a lot of studies around jury behavior and jury selection, and a skilled prosecutor, even a skilled defense attorney, will utilize that. For example, studies have shown that the closer that the jury is to the age of the defendant, the more likely they are to sympathize with them, or the more likely they are, if they have a particular occupation in common, the more likely they are to sympathize with them. So the jury of your peers is for a reason, and the studies have borne that out. I'm wondering, in your experience, or even with the case of Reggie, you know, what kinds of factors arose as a result of individual jurors and occupations, and those who may have had somebody injured or felt, you know, compelled to sort of take revenge on this particular defendant for something that happened with a family or friend.
Well, the real problem is that Reggie's lawyers didn't do a good job of finding out those really important issues.
For instance, like if you had a rape case, you want to find out who on the jury has been raped, or if they have a family member that's been raped, you want to get those people off the jury because of some biases that they may have and not their inability to listen to the facts in this case.
Absolutely. And this is another area where not having money also hurts you. You know, if you were talking about a white-collar criminal defendant, they would have hired jury consultants, they would have mock juries, they would do anything they could to know that they were getting a good jury. And here, I mean, I think it's really appalling when you have somebody whose life is on the line, they don't have the money, so they cannot, you know, use those kinds of resources, and they're just stuck getting whatever jury, you know, they're able to get, and they don't have, you know, the jury consultants, they don't have mock juries, and they don't know who the best jurors are for their case.
And when we talk about best jurors, we're not talking about tricking people. We're talking about this is an issue of fair. You want open-minded, fair people with no biases to be able to assess this case.
That's right. And it's not a situation where you're trying to find people that are, you know, more liberal or, you know, bend one way politically, or you're looking for people who really are from your community, who are fair, who are open-minded, who will look at the instructions that they're given, really think about the law, think about the facts, and do the right thing.
And in this particular case, we had a prosecutor that was breaking the law, breaking the rules, cheating to get a jury to convict. That was his only goal, was to get a jury that would convict no matter what he brought in front of him.
That's right. And you had defense lawyers who were unprepared, who didn't ask the right questions, who didn't make the right objections, and who were just completely outmatched in this regard.
And we're going to have to let that be the final word. I want to thank you both so much for joining us on the show this morning.
Thank you, and thank you for your commitment to Reggie's case. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Take care now. And I want to end this, Jamala, with giving instructions to folks about what they can do to get involved in Reggie's case.
We need to be hitting the streets with the petitions to get the governor of Missouri to grant clemency. And I want to say that there's been some, and we'll talk about this next week when we do the update on Reggie's case, but there's been some phenomenal people out there hitting the streets. And we need folks who do it on their own time, but we also have, you know, organized details. If people don't feel comfortable with going out by themselves, we're doing group things. So we'll be hitting the Fox next week when Mud Dia comes to town. And you can give us a call at 367-5959 if you can be a part of any of those details.
And the website is?
The website is www.justiceforreggie.com.
And we also are going to talk about also the results of the contest, the hip-hop contest that we have going on,
yeah,
too.
That's another futures program. So, yes, and that's going on, you know, as we speak. So, you know, people can go to the website and find out when that's happening and how to get involved. And we've already had several winners, and they have been phenomenal. So we look forward to having them.
Excellent. Thank you very much for joining us. And Jamala, thank you so much, and I'll see you next Thursday.
Okay.
All right, folks, I'll be back in the next hour. I'm Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. Stay with me.
It is time for us to use our power. Please do not beg for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how can I listen?
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing
the issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Aldinger. The Senate Judiciary Committee is about to get another earful on why the White House believes it's legal and necessary to listen in on some conversations. The panel's hearing is about to begin. ABC's Vic Ratner is a preview.
He's heard the administration arguments, but Judiciary Committee Chairman Arlen Specter is not buying it. He's drafting legislation to require surveillance decisions be made by judges.
The Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court ought to take a look at the program. Make a determination from this day forward whether it is constitutional.
Under pressure from key Republicans, intelligence experts will provide details of the top-secret program to a Senate committee today behind closed doors. Details the President and Vice President balked at providing until now. Vic Ratner, ABC News at the Capitol.
We've reached a major milestone in the battle against cancer. A study by the American Cancer Society and other groups finds for the first time in 70 years, overall deaths from the disease are down. Lynn Reese with the National Cancer Institute says the drop is due in part to more of us kicking the habit.
We're hoping as more and more people quit smoking that we will see an even steeper decline in the lung cancer mortality rate.
Now, taking a closer look at the study, it finds while cancer in men took a big drop, fatal cancer at least, enough to lower the average, deaths were up slightly among women. First Lady Laura Bush meets with the Italian premier today. She started off her day having an audience with Pope Benedict XVI.
It was just a general message of respect and best wishes from the president, and he said the same thing back.
And the meeting makes Mrs. Bush the highest-ranking American to get an audience with the new Roman Catholic leader face-to-face. Looking for a job, the number filing for unemployment was up slightly last week, but not as much as economists had expected. You two won't be out of a job in rock and roll anytime soon. They were the big winners last night at the Grammys. The Dow up 25 points, NASDAQ ahead by 12 in early going. This is ABC News.
Harry, what are you doing in our living room shirtless?
Don't call me Harry. My name is Thor, Prince of the Night.
Thor?
Yes, my temptress. I have traveled far to find you this treasure.
What treasure?
A treasure as unique as you, my damsel.
A diamond right-hand ring for Valentine's Day?
Yes, surrender to me.
Oh, Thor.
Anyone can be a romantic hero this Valentine's Day. Give her a diamond right-hand ring that shows you know who she really is. Go to adiamondisforever.com/valentine and find the perfect style for her.
Valentine's Day is next Tuesday, and Kohl's I Love to Save sale has everything you love for less, plus power hours. Night Owls save even more Friday, 3 to 11 p.m. Early Bird Saturday, 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. Like an extra 15% off diamond and sterling silver jewelry, already 60% off. 50 to 60% off Daisy Fuentes, Nine & Company, and Access Sportswear. And men's solid piqué polos for just $9.99. What's not to love? The I Love to Save sale this Friday and Saturday only at Kohl's. Expect great things.
A man whose wife and baby were found dead in their Massachusetts home has been arrested in England. Police believe Neil Entwistle, who is British, fled the U.S. just before the bodies were discovered. A five-time Olympian's been selected to carry the U.S. flag at tomorrow night's opening ceremony. Chris Whitty's been in four winter games as a speed skater. She won the gold in the 10,000 meters in Salt Lake City and a bronze in 1998.
It's an amazing team to be part of, but to lead them into the opening ceremonies, I'm thrilled, and I can't imagine a bigger honor than this.
She's also competed in a summer games as a cyclist. Reunited, and it feels, well, Barbie and Ken were never the most emotional couple, but after a two-year break, remember when she dumped him for her trainer? Well, they're back together, and it might have something to do with Ken's snazzy new look. He has a more rugged jaw, maybe a little plastic surgery. He's also spiffed up his wardrobe, and thank goodness he got rid of that earring. I'm Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Bryant-Meyer with your WGNU news update for the 9 o'clock hour. In the news this Thursday, a St. Louis man injured in a car accident late last month is dead. 66-year-old Felix Lloyd lost control of his car and overturned on January 27th on I-44 in Webster County. Lloyd died of his injuries yesterday at a Springfield, Missouri hospital. A Miami, Florida man is charged with stealing the identities of Missourians online and using them to buy thousands of dollars worth of merchandise. Henry Lee Berry is charged with two felony counts of identity theft. Prosecutors say Berry used stolen identities to open credit accounts and buy items from several online stores, including Best Buy, Lowe's, Macy's, and Home Depot. The victims include a Festus woman who lost almost $3,800. Authorities will work to extradite Berry to Jefferson County. A sales tax on goods purchased online is unworkable right now, according to Missouri Congressman Todd Akin. Dozens of separate taxing authorities and hundreds of differing rates will keep the Internet free of taxes for now, but Akin says things may have to change in the future.
I think at a certain point politically, if they change enough, there'd be enough pressure from the states that then there'd be more interest in moving legislation.
Right now, Internet sales account for around 10% of all sales. States are missing out on the sales tax revenue on those sales. As Internet sales grow, Akin says states will likely increase the pressure for a central taxing authority to tax online sales. Finally this hour, U.S. Cellular is now an official member of the Cardinal family. The company agreed to a five-year, $5.2 million sponsorship deal, making them the exclusive wireless sponsor of the St. Louis Cardinals. The deal will allow the company to offer enhanced cellular service through the installation of sophisticated wireless systems and to promote its products in and around the new Busch Stadium. This WGNU News Report is brought to you by TomTom. TomTom Go is your portable, everyday GPS solution. Just tap the screen and a helpful voice guides you on your way. To learn more, visit TomTom.com. That's your look at local news for the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Bryant-Meyer for Radio Free St. Louis.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by your greater St. Louis area Toyota dealers. Westbound 270 between 159 and 157 on the east side. Look for an accident involving a tractor trailer and a medical emergency. Crews will be on the scene through morning rush. There's about a mile jam at the site at this hour. Westbound 70 at Cypress and Lindbergh at has been cleared. Northbound 55 between Imperial Main and Green Park, no problems there. Eastbound 44 from Bowles to Merrimack River Bridge looks for slow traffic in pockets. Northbound 270 from Doherty Ferry back to Gravois looks for slow traffic in pockets as well. Westbound 40 between McCausland and Hanley looks for delays there. Northbound 55 from 4500 South Broadway to Potomac. Look for slow traffic there. Westbound 40 between 270 and Mason. Look for slow traffic due to an earlier accident. And eastbound 40 is being switched onto new lanes between Lake St. Louis and Route DD, which is in Wing Haven. That's a part of a project to construct a new interchange at Highway N. The switch should be complete by the evening rush hour. Northbound 270 from Page, look for maintenance operations, have a lane partially blocked on eastbound Page. Westbound 5570 from 4th Street onto the PSB, expect delays. Westbound 64 at the Bowell Avenue and the PSB, look for slow traffic. Westbound Kingbridge traffic at the Illinois Bank and Laclede's Landing, look for slow traffic as well. Northbound Route 3 at Monsanto and the Poplar Street Bridge, expect some congestion, but it's starting to clear up at this hour. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by your greater St. Louis area Toyota dealers, Toyota owners. Tires are an important part of your vehicle. Through February, purchase four tires from your St. Louis Metro Toyota dealer and receive three complimentary oil changes. Toyota, moving you forward. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Saturday. Mostly sunny this morning and afternoon, becoming partly cloudy throughout the day with a high around 40 this evening. Not quite as cold, mostly cloudy. Flurries after midnight with a low in the upper 20s. Friday, mostly cloudy. Flurries are possible in the afternoon, high around 30s. Friday evening, mostly cloudy, flurries still with a low in the lower 20s. Then on Saturday, there's a possibility of flurries, mostly cloudy skies with a high in the mid-30s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have under sunny skies 24 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 25 and clear skies as well. That is a look at this hour's traffic and weather. We'll take another look at your news and weather in the 10 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Join the members of the 7th Police District Community Partnership for lunch as we honor the outstanding efforts of some of St. Louis' finest, the police officers of the 7th District. Blueberry Hill owner Joe Edwards will be the featured speaker with KEZK's Ed Goodman as the MC.
This is Captain Jim Moran of the 7th District. Show your support by having lunch with us at the pageant on Wednesday, February 22nd at noon.
A limited number of tickets are still available for this event. Don't miss out. For more information or to purchase tickets, call Officer Kim at 444-0047, 314-444-0047.
Hi, it's Kevin.
And Sue McCarthy
of the Travel Planner Show.
Before you head out for a trip, you want to know how to pack, so check weather at yahoo.com, and then you'll know what to wear when you get there.
Oh, she's so good. The Travel Planner Show, every Saturday afternoon from 2 to 4 here on AM 920 WGNU.
A voice for those that should be heard. This is the award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brothers, how can you listen? I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brothers.
It is time for us to use our power. Please do not beg, hope for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you. The people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I
I will never say that progress is being made. You stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches. There's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
In this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome, 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 welcome to the morning wake-up call. Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. My goodness, we have all kinds of stuff to talk about. We have all kinds of stuff to talk about this morning. We are going to talk about something that is a personal irritant of mine, seen after the State of the Union speech. George W. Bush gave his little spiel and said, and the most, I guess this is profundity coming from Boy George. This is a profundity. We're addicted to oil. We are addicted to oil. So let's go nuclear. That's a profundity. It's interesting that as he talks about our addiction to oil, the words were almost still in the air. Still in the air. That Exxon Mobil broke records, earning records. They posted a fourth quarter profit of $10.7 billion. And George W. Bush says that we're addicted to oil. Who? No, we're being gouged by oil, and we need to talk about that to facilitate that conversation. Tyson Slocum, Director of Public Citizens Energy Program, is joining us from Washington, D.C. Tyson, good morning.
Liz, how are you?
I'm wonderful. We're addicted to oil, huh?
We are indeed.
And that's what the problem is. It's our addiction, right?
That's right. It has nothing to do with, for example, the energy bill that the president signed into law just 5 months ago that gives, $5 billion in subsidies to oil companies. I mean, that addiction to campaign contributions from oil companies plays no role whatsoever.
And Tyson, I was looking at your statement to your testifying before Congress. Did they put you under oath?
They did not, and your viewers can go to a website called fednet.net, which has all of the hearings streaming on videos on that website. And I demanded to be sworn under oath when the chairman of the committee, Arlen Specter, did not administer the oath to me or any of the other witnesses. And Chairman Spector refused my request to be put under oath. So I said, Mr. Chairman, let the record show. And at this point, I raised my right hand. And I said that the testimony I'm about to give is the truth, so help me God.
You were alone in your commitment to the truth, were you not?
Unfortunately, the truth is a rare commodity in Washington, D.C. these days.
And Tyson, it's just, there are so many mind-numbing, you know, exorcist moments with this administration where your head just spins all the way around. But we're at a point where elected officials are insisting that when people come to Congress, they don't get sworn under oath. It makes your head spin around like you're in The Exorcist.
Yeah, I mean, the American people deserve nothing less than to be assured that witnesses coming before Congress take some sort of public oath that they're going to tell the truth to the American people.
Because that's not a hearing anymore.
Exactly.
It's really not a hearing because they could go to a bar and have the same conversation because it's meaningless.
Yeah, it's really quite unfortunate. I think it just shows how special interests really control the process here in Washington, D.C.
But it also underscores the culture of corruption.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no question when you take a look at the energy bill, which, by the way, the president didn't even mention in his State of the Union address, mm-hmm. probably because even he is too ashamed of it. It's Jack Abramoff style of lawmaking, mm-hmm. where Congress and the White House put together legislation that does nothing at all to address the real problem, but it does a whole lot to appease very powerful special interests. And in this case, the nuclear power industry and the oil industry are the big winners in the energy legislation that the president signed into law just 5 months ago.
And give us some of the specific outrages.
Well, the oil industry in total receives $5 billion in subsidies in the new energy bill.
In handouts.
Yeah. And the nuclear power industry receives $13 billion in new subsidies. So some of the examples of oil subsidies, the Bush Energy Plan provides a brand new spending program that will spend $1.5 billion of our money over the next 10 years and give direct cash payments to companies that want to drill really deep wells in the Gulf of Mexico. So that's $1.5 billion of our money going to extremely wealthy oil companies.
And let's just stay there for a minute, Tyson.
Mm-hmm.
We're giving a handout of our money, and the same time that it's going to cost kids more to go to college, if they can go to college, and there are no grants for kids for all practical purposes. Medicaid, Medicare is being steadfastly eliminated. Money for No Child Left Behind, it is not being funded. It is not being fully funded or funded. We have a city on the Gulf, on that same coast, that has been wiped off the face of the map for all practical purposes. They're not getting their funding, and there is no focus on rebuilding New Orleans or the Gulf Coast. A company that has made $110 billion in a quarter profit is getting handed billions of dollars to do work what they can't afford? They can't afford to do this their own self?
Exactly. I mean, clearly the $55 million in campaign contributions since 2001 that the oil industry has given the White House and Congress.
55 what?
$55 million in campaign contributions. I mean, that's what's driving this, clearly.
And I guess that is a wonderful – if you can get – spend $55 million and get a $10.7 billion return, and that's money well spent.
Exactly. There is no better investment as far as getting a return in the form of profits than corporations giving campaign contributions. It is incredible at how cheaply members of Congress and even the White House will sell sell their services to the highest bidder.
Break it down for us, Tyson, because you do this wonderful breakdown. You did a wonderful breakdown in front of Congress. What you're telling us is not anything that you haven't already told Congress. So break it down for us, the amount, who's giving the money to which party and how much.
Well, in total, all the big oil companies have given $55 million in campaign contributions since 2001. Now, that is to the White House, and that's to congressional candidates. 81% of that $55 million has gone to Republicans. So while Democrats have received some contributions, it clearly is heavily partisan. 81% of the contributions going to Republicans tells me that it is a highly Republican-leaning industry. And those campaign contributions have directly translated to preferential access at the highest level of government, beginning with the Vice President Dick Cheney Energy Task Force report that the President convened back in 2001. Most of Cheney's recommendations made it into the energy bill that the President signed into law just 5 months ago. Like I said earlier, that law does nothing at all to deal with America's addiction to oil, but rather it reflects Congress's and Bush's addiction to the campaign contributions from the oil industry, because the oil industry, like I was saying, got $5 billion in brand new subsidies, and this is at a time of the biggest profits in the world's history for that industry. That makes no fiscal policy sense, but it makes a lot of sense when you follow the money trail.
And you talk about 87% going to Republicans.
81%.
But break it down by oil company, because some oil companies were a lot clearer, as if 81% is not clear enough. But there are some oil companies that had even higher numbers to the contributions to the Republican Party.
Well, yeah. I mean, clearly the big leader is ExxonMobil. ExxonMobil gave, let me see here, they've given $2.3 million in campaign contributions since 2001, with 90% going to Republicans. ConocoPhillips has made $1.1 million in campaign contributions, again with 90% going to Republicans. Valero, which is a large owner of oil refineries in the United States, they are going to be a big recipient of a new $400 million tax break that the president signed into law in August. They've given $1 million in campaign contributions, with 96% of that $1 million going to Republicans. And the list goes on and on.
And is there, are you seeing, are you feeling, are you hearing a connection of outrage of the American people on this? Are we feeling that now?
Well, yeah, because you have to remember that the American people are looking at these record profits at a time when they are paying record high prices for, you know, to heat their homes with natural gas, to pay higher amounts for gasoline at the pump. And there's a direct connection between the higher prices we all are paying and these record profits that the oil companies are enjoying. And that's why when I testified before the Senate on February 1st, you know, we called for a windfall profits tax. We said, look, the federal government needs to make big investments. The president himself in his State of the Union address outlined a number of new spending initiatives to promote alternative fuels. He didn't tell the American people how he planned to pay for those new initiatives. Well, we've come up with a solution. Tax some of the profits from these oil companies and ask the oil companies to finance some of these investments. That seems like an equitable solution to us.
And give us some example, Tyson, on how the taxing component would work.
Well, sure, it would. Just like right now, you know, individuals and corporations pay a tax on income. Congress can simply designate a new higher tax rate on the income earned by large oil companies, and then dedicate that new revenue to things that would solve some of America's energy problems. For example, it would help finance investment in alternative fuels, like the president outlined in his State of the Union address. It could increase investments in our mass transit systems. It could provide, you know, cash rebates to middle and lower income consumers to help shield them from these high prices. It could also go in the form of rebates to consumers so that they can increase investments in home weatherization to upgrade their insulation, their windows, trade in their old appliances for new energy efficient ones, all of these things. And also money to go to public schools to help offset the higher energy costs that schools are forced to pay. All of these things are possible with a windfall profits tax.
And the response that we're getting from some members of Congress is that it's almost a philosophical response, that somehow it is wrong for a country to punish those who make money.
Yeah, no, this isn't about punishing. The fact is, for 100 years, we have taxed incomes, and we have taxed wealthier people like Bill Gates at a higher rate than, you and I, for example. And that's because our tax system for the last century has been based on the ability to pay. If you make a whole lot of money, you can afford to contribute more to reinvest back in our communities. And that's the theory. This is not about ending the ability of ExxonMobil to profit. We wouldn't advocate that. I wouldn't want to see that. That would be very ineffective. But what we're saying is $36 billion in profit in 1 year is excessive, and especially when we have glaring needs here at home, when the president himself acknowledges that we are addicted to oil and that is a major problem. Well, it's going to cost billions of dollars for us to transition away from the fossil fuel economy. The president outlined about $150 million to promote ethanol. Well, it's going to take billions of dollars to implement ethanol. It's about reformulating the retail gas stations on your street corner. You can't move ethanol through existing natural gas or crude oil pipelines. You have to build a brand new national pipeline network. That in itself will cost billions of dollars. You have to build hundreds of refineries across the country. All of this costs a lot of money, and it's going to take a lot of investment. And I think that the oil companies should play a role in helping to finance some of that transition.
What about the environmental concerns of some of the initiatives that are being pushed by George Bush? I hear the word nuclear a lot.
Yeah.
And the drilling in the Gulf Coast region. Where are we on the environmental concerns about that? Is that being discussed by this administration?
Not enough. I mean, first of all, the huge subsidies for nuclear power are misguided, because nuclear power is not safe. It's not environmentally healthy. It's not sustainable. It produces high-level radioactive waste.
And let me hold that thought. We'll be right back because we have to take a quick break here, Tyson. I'm talking to Tyson Slocum, Director of Public Citizens Energy Program. He's joining us from Washington, D.C., fresh from testifying under oath in front of our United States Congress. Stay with us.
More than you can spend. But all of the money in the whole wide world is not gonna help you in the end. Now while there's still time to be saved, don't take that attitude to your grave. Might be too late for you, I'm afraid. So don't take that attitude to your grave.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Tune in 2 to 4 weekday afternoons on AM 920 WGNU. Dial 1-800-DR-LAURA and let's go take on the day.
Hello, I'm Lucille Mitchell from the Bible Answer Crusade broadcast. Every Sunday morning at 9, the Seventh-day Adventist churches in the St. Louis area present a unique ministry that couples teaching and the Word of God to insights that will help you with everyday living. We deal with the areas concerning health, family, prophecy, and the gospel. And I think you will find every program is full of information you can use in your own life. Please listen to the Bible Answer Crusade broadcast every Sunday morning at 9, right here on Radio 920 WGNU.
You don't have to travel all the way to the mall to visit your Sears. Why don't you visit the only black-owned and operated Sears located at 3425 Union. That's 3425 Union. Sears, where else?
Where else are you going to get your washers, your dryers, your big screen televisions? That's every single thing that you need. It is so convenient to be able to drive in your community to a full service, best customer service in the state of Missouri, Sears. That's right there at the corner of Union and Natural Bridge, 3425 Union, Sears. Tools, TVs, DVDs, get your shop on and tell them I told you to.
The Struggle for Fairness on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Baile, para qué? Baile, musebetsi. Baile, para qué? Baile, musebetsi. Makanisi konango. Baile para qué, baile musebetsi, baile para qué, baile musebetsi, makanisi kwanambo.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. I'm talking to Tyson Slocum. He's the Director of Public Citizens Energy Program, joining us from Washington, D.C. And Tyson, we were talking about the environmental concerns that were not expressed by this administration for some of the new energy policies that he's pushing.
Well, yeah, and one of the biggest problems is with nuclear power, where basically what a commercial nuclear reactor is a contained active nuclear reaction that's going on in these plants that are, you know, located in our communities. And, you know, in an age of concerns about terrorism, these are not safe or secure facilities, especially if we're going to go and build a lot of new ones, which is what the president and the subsidies included in the energy bill is going to try to do. These are incredibly expensive to build and to operate because they are such huge security concerns, and they produce high-level radioactive waste, which sticks around for hundreds of thousands of years, and we have no safe way to store it, which raises other environmental and security problems. So increasing our reliance on nuclear power is not environmentally sustainable, it's not economically feasible, and it's not going to make America safer.
And what about drilling on the, off the coast, off the Gulf Coast?
Well, yeah, there are efforts underway right now to expand drilling, especially along the east coast of the United States and off the coast of Florida. And again, this is simply buying into Bush's, you know, it's contrary to what he said, that we're addicted to oil. If it's true that we're addicted to oil, the last thing you do to an addict is continue giving him the thing that he or she is addicted to.
Mm.
What we should be doing, as the president himself acknowledged, is stop subsidizing fossil fuels like oil and start subsidizing clean, renewable energy. And another thing that the president failed to mention is that one out of every four barrels of oil consumed in the world every day is used by us here in the United States. We use 25% of the world's oil every day. And if we're going to get serious about curbing our addiction to oil, we need to use less. And you do that by improving fuel economy standards, which President Bush has adamantly opposed. And you do that by transitioning away from the oil-based economy to a alternative fuel or renewable energy economy.
And there, I want to talk to you about two things, but before I get to that, I want to ask you this. The energy folks were asked to come back to testify in front of at a hearing again, right?
The energy companies?
Yes.
Well, the last time they testified was in November of 2005.
Mm-hmm.
They have been invited to come before the committee before which I testified last week, the Senate Judiciary Committee, on February 28th.
And did they refuse to come when you were there?
Well, yeah, they were invited to come at the same hearing, which I testified on February 1st, and they did refuse to come. Apparently, allowing them to testify not under oath isn't enough anymore. They simply, decline invitations to come tell the American public why, you know, ExxonMobil is justified in having $36 billion in profits at a time when rising energy prices are a threat to our economic growth.
So there were two things that you testified to at the hearing last week that I think are intricately connected. You talked about the cost, the impact of recent mergers, and you talked about also, okay, we have these recent mergers that allow for gas prices to be where they are, and we also have an FTC that is not protecting us from these mergers.
Yeah, exactly.
And the results of them.
Since 1999, when we approved the merger of Exxon and Mobil, and that was done under a Democratic administration under Bill Clinton. So, you know, this isn't just all George Bush or Republicans. We've seen a wave of mergers where huge global competitors, I mean, Exxon and Mobil were the two biggest oil companies in the United States in 1999. We allowed them to merge and become one company, and quickly followed by, you know, Chevron Texaco in 2001, and then in 2002, Conoco and Phillips merged, and then there have been a number of other acquisitions by these mega companies. And as a result, you have a huge amount of consolidation over energy assets around the world and in the United States. Because remember, a company like ExxonMobil, it operates like a type of monopoly. It extracts and drills for oil in the United States and around the world. It ships that oil on its own pipeline and oil tanker network that it owns. It sends that crude oil into oil refineries that it owns, where crude oil is turned into gasoline, and then it moves that gasoline to its retail-branded gas stations on your street corners. So you've got a company that is making record profits at every single stage of production, and that is anti-competitive, because what we've seen is these companies use huge control over market share to engage in anti-competitive practices that result in much higher prices to American consumers.
And the government that allowed this to happen also was charged with protecting us from this.
Yeah, exactly. Like you said, the Federal Trade Commission, or FTC, is the federal agency that's supposed to be regulating these types of mergers, and they've been doing an awful job. They have not been protecting consumers. They seem to be prioritizing the needs of shareholders, which is not their legal mission. And so as a result, we have allowed too many mergers, which has consolidated control in too few hands. And what we need to do, and in fact what some of the senators were exploring during my testimony, was whether or not we need to revisit the wisdom of some of these mergers, because clearly consumers are not being served well.
So how do you do a do-over?
Well, you first of all, I think we need to have an investigation that includes the power of subpoena. We need to be able to get our hands on internal company communications. And if we can document that these companies are using their huge size and scope to engage in anti-competitive behavior that results in much higher prices to consumers and bigger profits for themselves, then we can go in and take corrective action. We can order a breakup like the government did of AT&T if we find that internal communications clearly show that companies are abusing their size and power. That is un-American, and I think that we need to have an investigation, and if the investigation finds that they are manipulating, then we can take action to, rewind the clock and break up these mergers.
So we have to find them guilty of that before we can break it up? We can't break it up just because it's turned out to be bad for the nation?
Well, I think it would be helpful if we have some smoking gun evidence.
Right.
I mean, right now we've got lots of You know, we've got circumstantial evidence that shows that they're engaging in anti-competitive practices. But, you know, as we've seen with Enron, for example, where their CEOs are under trial right now, everyone suspected that Enron was manipulating the market. But it wasn't until subpoenas were issued and we were able to get our hands on the internal recordings of some of Enron's energy traders where it was clear, it was irrefutable proof that the company was that caused the California energy crisis by intentionally shutting down power plants to create shortages that resulted in blackouts and caused energy prices to soar. That's when the American people, you know, knew without a doubt that the company was bad. And I think we need to do the same thing with the oil companies.
And let me ask you this. Does Hugo Chavez factor into this in any kind of real way?
Absolutely. Hugo Chavez is the elected presidential leader of Venezuela, which is a major oil-producing and oil-exporting nation. Hugo Chavez's state-owned oil company has a U.S. subsidiary. It's called Citgo. And Citgo is the only company in the United States that is doing something about the negative impact that high prices have had on low-income consumers. Citgo has already donated tens of millions of dollars to low-income consumers in Chicago, in New York City, in Boston, and in the state of Maine, where local officials there have negotiated with Citgo, and Citgo has said, we realize that we are making more money off of the high prices that Americans are paying, and we feel we have an obligation to help shield the poorest of the poor from these high prices. No other oil company can say that. And say what you will about Hugo Chavez.
Well, I love Hugo Chavez. So.
But he is doing, I think, a great thing here for the American public, and I wish that ExxonMobil and American-based companies would be doing the same.
And in terms of the campaign contributions, in terms of the benefit from the mergers and everything, how does Citgo factor in?
Well, Citgo is a much smaller player than some of these other companies.
So they're not making the same ExxonMobil profits.
No, they're not. I mean, their parent company in Venezuela definitely is. Mm-hmm. I mean, but it's a state-owned, it's a government-owned company. Mm-hmm. So the proceeds are going back to the Venezuelan government, where Hugo Chavez has been reinvesting a lot of that oil wealth into greatly expanded social programs and education programs and healthcare for the Venezuelan people. So, Citgo has definitely been making money off of the American people, and I think that that's why Hugo Chavez has ordered his company to work with low-income consumers in the United States to provide tens of millions of dollars in money to help them out, because he recognizes that there's a moral obligation when you're making a lot of money off of a commodity that everybody needs, that you have to give something back.
And we're going to take a break here. I'm talking to Tyson Slocum, Director of Public Citizens Energy Program. He's joining us from Washington, D.C. This is Liz Brown. It's Valentine's Day. Come on, it's next week. What are you going to do? I know you haven't finished your plan, and I know you haven't done what you needed to do. What you going to do? Here's it. Okay, all right, I'll fix it for you. I will fix it for you. Here's what you can do. A Valentine's Day shout-out, a Valentine's Day message of love right here on the wake-up call. That's right. All you have to do is call 367-2743, 367-2743. We'll put together a message for you and your loved one. I love you, mom, dad, boyfriend, girlfriend, son, daughter, aunt, uncle, grandma, grandpa. We'll do it here.
right here on the Wake Up Call. So let the world know how much you love your baby. Let the world know how much you love your baby by calling 367-2743. 367-2743. We'll put together a Valentine's Day love message for your loved one right here on the Wake Up Call.
This is your Wake Up Call Global News Update. Dateline Tripoli. The training of insurgent recruits to fight against the U.S.-led coalition forces in Iraq has been given over to a group called the Salafist Brigade for Combat and Call. They've set up their training facilities in Algeria at the behest of the Al-Qaeda network after Syria started cracking down on their training camps as a fallout from the investigation of the murder of former Lebanese Prime Minister Rafiq Hariri. Sources say the Salafists are acting as a contractor for Al-Qaeda and have started to recruit Moroccan nationals to fight against America. A newspaper report says this information is based on testimony of captured Moroccans. And Dateline Kabul. Afghanistan leaders say the decision by Russia, Germany, and the United States to cancel Afghanistan's debt to them is a very good move. President Hamid Karzai says his country is starting to rebuild from nothing because of 30 years of war and devastation, and this will help the reconstruction effort immensely. The debt relief totals over $10 billion. The Bush administration says it forgives the entire $108 million it is owed by Afghanistan. The debt to Russia totals some $10 billion and goes back to when the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan back in 1979 and installed a communist government there. This is your Wake Up Call Global News Update.
Hi, this is Brett Rosen with Head Thumping Talk Radio on WGNU. Just letting you know that we are moving to a new time from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. every Thursday morning, dedicated to making you mad or making you think since 1999.
Hello, I'm Lucille Mitchell from the Bible Dancer Crusade broadcast. Every Sunday morning at 9, the Seventh-day Adventist churches in the St. Louis area present a unique ministry that couples teaching and the Word of God to insights that will help you with everyday living. We deal with the areas concerning health, family, prophecy, and the gospel. And I think you will find every program is full of information you can use in your own life. Please listen to the Bible Answer Crusade broadcast every Sunday morning at 9, right here on Radio 920 WGNU.
Learn survival techniques for the outdoors at the August A. Bush Conservation Area in St. Charles on Wednesday, February 15th from 6 to 9 p.m. Get prepared to survive in relative comfort if you find yourself unexpectedly spending the night outside. Learn what you need, including fire building, basic navigation, shelter, and signaling. Reservations close on Monday the 13th. To find out more, call 636-441-4554. Something for the great outdoors from Radio Free St. Louis.
Anywhere in the world at WGNU.net. The award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Rise up, oh. Rise up, oh. Everybody gotta rise up. Come follow me, rise up, oh. Rise up, oh. It's the mass, I've got to rise up. You got to rise up, oh. Rise up, oh. Everybody gotta rise up. Yeah, you gotta rise up, oh. Rise up, oh.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. I'm talking to Tyson Slocum, Director of Public Citizens Energy Program, joining us from Washington, D.C. Tyson, when you testified in front of Congress, was it last week?
Yeah, February 1st.
February 1st. Who else was there to testify?
Attorney General Blumenthal from the state of Connecticut, a Republican who has done a lot of investigations of oil companies. The head of the Government Accountability Office, which is the research arm of the United States Congress, they did a big report in May of 2004, which showed conclusive evidence that recent mergers in the oil industry have directly led to higher prices for consumers. and the head of the Federal Trade Commission, which, like we were talking earlier, is the regulatory agency that is supposed to be looking out for consumers, but actually has been doing an awful job of it.
And it seems like, well, did you all pretty much conclude the same things?
Well, no, we didn't. Well, the I and the myself and the Attorney General of Connecticut and the head of the Government Accountability Office, we were all in agreement that a major investigation, including the power of subpoenas, was necessary in order to get to the bottom of oil company profiteering. So we were all in agreement, and I think that a number of senators, including some Republicans, agreed that we need to take some more aggressive steps to protect consumers and hold oil companies accountable.
And so who was in disagreement with you?
The Federal Trade Commission. They felt that energy markets were extremely fair, that record profits posed no problems whatsoever, and that consumers should simply get used to paying higher prices.
Wait a minute. The Federal Trade Commission said that we need to just expect to live like this, and we're supposed to get over it, get used to it?
Yeah, that is what happens when you rely on a commodity like oil that is finite in nature and, said that oil company profits are justified.
How shocked should people be to hear that kind of a statement?
I think people should be very shocked. I think it shows how the special how the influence of special interests has insulated so many powerful people in Washington, D.C. from how high energy prices are really affecting the American people and American families.
And I want to go back to something that we had a bit of a conversation about in the first part of this hour. People should also be shocked of how cheap our politicians are.
How little money it takes to actually buy legislation. You know, there was a famous example back in 2002 that we helped expose, where Joe Barton, the head of the Energy Committee in the House of Representatives, received about $20,000 in campaign contributions, and he agreed to insert legislation into a huge energy bill that provided one company, a Kansas-based company called Westar Energy, provided them with a legislative favor. And that company later, the CEO is in federal prison now. And so what we looked at was we couldn't believe that $20,000 could buy you that kind of legislation. For us, it seemed like such a low threshold. Of course, it's far beyond what any average American can give. You know, I'm lucky if I can put together $50 to give to a candidate, let alone $20,000. But that's what goes on every day. And so you can imagine what happens, you know, when ExxonMobil gives $2.5 million in campaign contributions.
And again, I guess I just want to kind of juxtapose that with how much profit has ExxonMobil made from the $2 million that 90% of the campaigns went to Republicans? The $2.3 million was from 2001 to present. How much profit did ExxonMobil make on profit between the years of 2001 and 2005?
$110 billion.
And all it cost him was $2 million. And that's split up. It's not even $2 million to one person.
That's right.
It's just unbelievable.
All told, since President Bush took office, the largest five oil companies have made $300 billion
in profit. That means after rent, after heat, after electricity, profit.
That's profit, exactly. $300 billion.
And the total of money that they've given in campaign contributions?
$55 million.
$200 billion and $55 million. That's what it costs to get my tank of gas up to $75 to fill my tank.
Exactly. And, all the listeners out there, if you're mad at hearing all of these statistics and facts, it's time to pick up the phone and call your senators, call your representative and demand that they start holding oil companies accountable, demand that they repeal the tax breaks that were in that energy bill from 5 months ago, and that we start investigating these companies by starting to issue subpoenas, because we've got to get to the bottom of it. It's clear that these profits are coming at the expense of the American economy.
Let me get to caller or two. Max?
Those of us who warned against the Bush presidency in 2000, this is what we were screaming about. We were called cynics. We were called class warriors. I would say the Bush presidency has worked very well for the oil companies. Good day, everyone.
I agree completely with the caller.
Oil is belly, belly good for the Bush administration. And Tyson, where can people get a copy of your report?
It's on our website, which is www.citizen.org.
And aside from the fact that you didn't have, you insisted upon testifying under oath, the FTC didn't testify under oath, did they?
No, they did not.
And nobody else testified under oath. How hopeful are you that Congress and the committee didn't insist that they do? How hopeful are you that Congress is going to be able to do anything, or is going to have the will or the intestinal fortitude to do this?
Well, that's up to all the listeners out there. I mean, if our senators and our representatives aren't hearing from their constituents, then they are going to continue prioritizing the campaign contributions that they get from the oil industry over the voters that are out there. So you've got to get in touch with your senators and your representative and demand that they start doing something. Once they start hearing from people, you know, start sending your home heating bill or your receipt from filling up your gas tank in your car. Start sending those to your senators and say, I can't afford this. Can you, Mr. Senator? You know, it's time that you need to do something about this.
And when we hear from the oil companies saying that this is the cost, this is the money that we need to put back into finding more oil sources to research and drilling, when they tell us that this is the reason why the prices are this high, what should people say back to them?
Well, first of all, profit means that's not being reinvested. Profit is going to shareholders in the form of higher dividends and things like that. And the other thing that I would say is the president, in his State of the Union address, said we are addicted to oil. So why on earth should we be paying record high prices so that oil companies can simply drill for the thing that the president says we're addicted to? That doesn't make any sense.
Tyson Slocum, Director of Public Citizens Energy Program. What's the website again?
www.citizen.org.
Very good. Tyson, thank you so much.
Hey, my pleasure, Liz.
All right, take care. Listen, folks, Liz Brown, wake up call. I will be back same time, same place tomorrow. Until then, stay strong.
It is time for us to use our power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very bad news for all of you. The people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight. Remember? I will never say that progress is being made. If you take a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out this inch, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound
that's
the blow
that the blow made. I think I'm hearing revolution with the air, feel the brother. Stop resisting.
Truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more
issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Aldinger.
America will not wait to be attacked again.
President Bush speaking this morning in Washington about the war on terror while on Capitol Hill. The Senate Intelligence Committee is huddled in a closed-door meeting dissecting the president's domestic spying program.
Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez is expected to describe the domestic terrorist intercept program in great